Allie, is it okay with you if Ruben sits down?
It's fine, Ruben. Thank you for joining us.
Check it. I want to make sure.
You're listening to the Kevin Bean Show on a Friday morning here on K-Rock. By the way, comedian and Daily Show correspondent Roy Wood Jr. joins us in studio in the 8 o'clock hour. And if I remember correctly, from when he stopped by to see us in New York in February, he's a former radio host, too, as well. Roy is.
Yeah, that's where he started, right? In the South.
Yeah, in Birmingham. Yeah. So I like him. I like Roy.
Such a radio
He'll be joining us coming up. Kevin's referring to our friend Ruben, who's in studio. Ruben, by the way, is a nice young man. If you call the Kevin and Bean Show and Beer Mug doesn't pick up, Ruben is the one who picks up. And he does a bunch of other stuff for us. He's a very nice man. And the reason he's in studio right now is because we were talking yesterday off the air about people who do the right thing even when it has negative repercussions for themselves. All right? So you're too honest for your own good. You could have gotten away with it if it weren't for you giving yourself up. Got a couple stories in the news about that, but let's start with you, Ruben. What'd you do?
Good morning, party people. Yeah, I experienced that a while back. It's a gas station that's very close to my house that I used to go to all the time. So I'm sure the gas station attendant probably saw me more than once and could recognize me.
Oh, I see how the story changes immediately upon second telling.
So I went in to purchase gas, and I had a $50 bill with me. And
money bags? What's
right?
happening over here?
What are we paying Ruben?
Oh, this is smallest I got. 50.
This is before I worked here when I actually made money.
Oh,
oh, took a turn.
So, I had a $50 bill, and I went and put, you know, $20 on whatever pump it was, and the attendant gave me change as if I had given him a $100 bill.
So now you have $80.
Yeah.
Luck out.
So I was pretty happy about that,
Sweet.
And I was like, yeah, my day's going pretty good. So I went out to pump gas, and I look across the street, and there's a church, and then my Catholic guilt kicks in.
Okay, yeah, wait. All right, hold on. So let me just ask you a question. So he gives you $80 in change after you give him $50.
Yes.
Did you think about admitting it before you looked over and saw the church?
Yes, because as he was giving me the money, I thought to myself, score.
Right, but that's not what I'm saying. Then did you think I need to tell him the truth?
Yes,
you did.
Immediately.
I think Ruben needed the minute that it took him to walk back and start pumping his gas to really get the gears going in his head.
And see the church.
And realize this guy, I buy gas here all the time, and this guy's going to know it's me, and I'll probably get found out if I don't turn it
back.
So
it's more selfish than selfless, right?
I was just thinking about doing the right thing the whole time. Even though I knew I had extra money in my pocket, I was like, this isn't right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's not your money.
Exactly. But
why hurt a small business?
Right. So I saw the church and immediately thought, I got to do the right thing now. So I walked.
If the church wasn't there.
I don't know. It could have been different. It could have worked out differently.
So you walked back in.
Walked back in, and he was distracted, so I knocked on the window, and I said, hey, I think you gave me more change than you should have. Mm-hmm. And he looked over at, you know, the money I had given him, and he realized it was a 50, and he said, oh, okay. And he's like, and so I just slid the money to him, and he's like, thank you. Then he gave me the appropriate change.
And then he said, my son, I want four Hail Marys and five Our Fathers. What if that was Jesus?
Right? So, Ruben, when you're driving away from that encounter, did you feel good about what you had done? Or were you, like, hitting yourself going, I'm stupid, stupid, stupid?
I felt like I had done the right thing, obviously. Mm-hmm. But I also felt hungry because I knew I could have gone down to the In-N-Out and grabbed a burger.
Is it better to do the right thing and be poor or do the wrong thing and get In-N-Out? I mean, I guess that's the question of the table.
I mean, In-N-Out does ruin that whole thing.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Ruben, I think you did the right thing. I'm proud of you.
Thank you, Bean.
There's another story out of...
go answer the phones, Ruben.
Del Rapids, South Dakota. You can call us, by the way, if you were honest and it sort of came back and hurt you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you were honest, and there were repercussions for you. You benefited from not being honest, but you decided to be honest anyway.
1-800-520-1067. There's a girl named Kate Winja who was playing golf. So, I mean, you know, nothing real important. But she was in a tournament, and her high school was in a tournament. And she went back over her scorecard at the end, and she realized that she had given herself a 4 on hole 18 instead of a 5, which was actually what she earned.
Okay.
She had won the tournament at this point, and her team had won the tournament at this point.
Oh.
So she goes back to them, and she says, I need to change this from a 4 to a 5. She was 3 or 4 strokes under, so she still would have won score-wise had she not done that. But as soon as she says that she made a mistake on her score, they disqualify her.
From the whole thing?
Yes. So now she doesn't come in any place in that tournament, and her team doesn't win.
Oh, Kate.
Right?
Now, that's a really interesting example, Kevin, because as you said, she would have won anyway, even with the mistake not noticed. And she's not the only one who suffers the repercussion of her speaking up about this. Her team was disqualified as a result of the mistake on her scorecard,
and
right?
Here's what else I would say. If there was one stroke between you and second place, okay, I can see that maybe there's an issue with that. But she was she was 3 or 4 strokes ahead. So the mistake on the scorecard didn't really affect who won or how.
It affected her heart, her soul.
And
she
her team, most
shame.
Of all.
She and her coach reported the violation to the tournament directors, who had no choice but disqualify her. That means her team finished second and not first, it says here. The situation is awful, but I have so much respect for Kate to come and do that, says the tournament director. I cannot say enough for that young lady and how much integrity that took and how proud I am for a kid like that to be living in South Dakota. Again, she did the right thing.
Yeah.
What about the dude in Kansas that gave back the lottery ticket?
This is a crazy story. A guy comes into a convenience store in Salina, Kansas, with 3 lottery tickets to check to see whether they were winners. Well, for whatever reason, they checked 2 tickets, and he forgot or dropped the 3rd ticket on the counter and left the store. So the clerk picks up the 3rd ticket, runs it, and it's a $1 million winner.
Wow.
The guy's already gone, but the people at the convenience store roughly know where this guy lives. So they drive around his neighborhood to try to see his car so that they can tell him, hey, we have a $1 million lottery ticket that you accidentally left behind. This guy had no idea, by the way, I assume, that he had this ticket, right?
Yeah, I assume he thought that the guy checked them all and he didn't win.
Right, that's it.
Right.
Wow.
Certainly not a winning ticket, right? They couldn't find his house, but
at that point, right there you go, all right, look, we gave it a shot. We drove around.
We did the right thing. We couldn't find him.
Right. Oh, well.
So they couldn't find him. They go back, and at some point, the guy comes back in, and they're like, have we got news for you? You have $1 million.
You won $10,000.
That's what would have been, right? That would have been a nice compromise. Everybody wins.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So they gave him the $1 million ticket. He said the man who runs the convenience store, Cal Patel, says he never thought about keeping the money. He couldn't live with the guilt from keeping the money. It felt good to give it to the guy. And the praise we got back from everyone for doing this was really nice. They said it restored their faith in humanity. So that's what we're talking about right now on the Kevin and Bean Show. 1-800-520-1067. You were honest to a fault. Should we take one real quick before the break?
I don't see one that's on hold, but we can.
I've got Matt, line 2, on hold.
Okay.
And he's in Huntington Beach. Hey, Matt, welcome to the Kevin and Bean Show. Thank you for listening. So you did an honest thing, even though it cost you. What was it?
I was remodeling somebody's house a couple years ago. They had just purchased the house, and we were almost done with the house. They ended up being a very nice couple, and I was crawling around in the attic, and I moved some insulation, and there's this really thick white envelope, and I was like, oh, don't be full of money. I opened it up, and it absolutely was full of money. It was that $2,700 in it.
Wow.
I stared at it for about 20 minutes, and you know those 2 little angels on your shoulders?
Which one was winning? Which one was winning for most of those 20 minutes?
It out, man. So, you know, I had this moment of clarity. I was like, all right.
Hey,
so
did you? Let me ask you a question. Let me ask you a question. Did you think, hey, this might belong to the people that owned the house before, so giving it to the new couple, not necessarily returning it?
Well, I guarantee that's well, it had a date like 1995 on it, so it'd been there for a long time. But the people that we were building the house for, they were really, really cool people. They'd bring, you know, tequila, and we'd do shots and stuff at the end of the week with them. They were really cool.
All
so,
right.
I took the money down and I said, hey,
congratulations. I just found $700.
You know, well, I wish I had thought that, but I don't know.
$2,700.
But the lady, she like, her jaw hit the floor and she's like, oh my gosh. And she pulled out $300 and gave it to me.
Wow.
And then, like the next week she bought me this like $400 bottle of really nice tequila.
No, man. That's what he's saying, Kevin. That's not where this is going.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just bought
tequila. You know, it's really not. She was a senior citizen, but, you know. That's
all right, Matt, let me ask you one
question. Ladies need love too, Matt.
Let me ask you one question before we have to go, and that is, had the people whose home you were working on been dicks, had you really not liked them, do you think you would have kept the money?
Absolutely, I would have kept the money.
All right, Matt. Thank you for the call, sir. 1-800-520-1067. You were honest, and it cost you. Are we just trying to talk people out of being honest?
I mean, it feels that way, but no. I don't think that's our goal. Mm-mm.
We'll take your calls next on K-Rock.
All right, just had a green day. Let's take one phone call. Let's make it Jimmy in Eastvale. Hi there, Jimmy.
Hi, how you doing today?
Good, thank you.
Jimmy, where the hell is Eastvale?
Eastvale is near Norco, California, near... south of Ontario, right near the...
Is it Norco, but they just don't want to go by Norco?
Okay, how dare you? No.
All right, we're talking about you were so honest it hurt. What'd you do?
My wife and I got our wedding rings and went in to pay for them, or actually went up to pick them up, and they never charged us. I was on that credit plan. 6 months went by. I never received a bill.
Wow.
I felt bad. I didn't want my credit to be ruined, and I thought, oh, something's going to go wrong. Went back in there thinking, doing the right thing. They said, yeah, you're right. We never charged you for your wedding rings, but now we will. So
that...
I ended up...
You did the right thing, and you probably felt better in the long run.
I did, and it certainly paid off, but, you know, I thought, oh, maybe a discount or something. Nope. Thank you very much, guys. Have a great day.
Plus interest, by the way.
I can imagine, though, you know, the bill doesn't show up for the first month. You think, okay, maybe it's just slow paperwork, and then it's like 2 months, and then it's like 3 months, and you realize, hey, maybe we got away with this, but then you just couldn't live with yourself, I guess. You don't want to start off your marriage on a lie like that, I guess, right?
Exactly. 20 years strong, sir.
Oh, look at you.
Well, congrats, done, Jimmy. Jimmy.
Now, if you could only move her out of Eastvale, this would have a happy ending. Thank you for the call.
Leave Eastvale alone.
1-800-520-1067. Your call's next on K-Rock. Roy Wood Jr. from The Daily Show, stand-up comedian, very funny man, joins us in the 8 o'clock hour coming up on K-Rock. More Florence and the Machine tickets you can win, and WWE SummerSlam tickets as well. Before we go back to these calls, Kevin, you had this happen to you.
Yeah, I was on the receiving end.
Super honest, right?
Yes, I left my wallet at a McDonald's and went home. Mm-hmm. Somewhere in there, it had my phone number on it, mm-hmm. and somebody that was just a customer called and said, hey, we have your wallet if you left it there. And I was like, wow, that's amazing. Like, I didn't even know where it was, of course, because I'm me.
Right.
And they said, yeah, we'll meet you here and we'll give it to you. And I was like, okay, great. So we set up a time. I went to the McDonald's, mm-hmm. and I figured, I don't know, there was 20 or 30 bucks in it. Mm-hmm. I figured they'd take the cash, but I got my credit cards back and my license, and so that would totally be worth it. They gave it to me with all the cash in it.
Did you give them all something?
No, I needed that 30 bucks. I don't make Reuben money. No, of course I did. But that's a very cool thing for somebody to do.
Yeah.
Speaking of returning money, let's go to line 7. We'll get through as many of these as we can. This is going to be our friend Ray. He's in Chatsworth listening to the Kevin and Bean Show. Ray, so honest it hurts. What happened?
How's it going, guys?
Good, good. Thank you.
Good, good. So when I was 18 years old, during holiday season, my friends and I were walking around the mall, and I came across this little pouch, and inside of it was $5,000.
Wow.
Yeah. To my surprise, you know, I was super stoked at 18. I was really excited. I didn't know what to do with it, so I took it home for 2 days. 2 days had gone by, and I was trying to figure out what I was going to do with it. I didn't tell my parents, didn't tell anyone else. And so I ended up going back to the same shopping center where there happened to be a little coffee shop. And it turns out that an older gentleman, probably in his 70s, had come back the last 2 days looking for the money. So I came back, and the clerk told me that was happening. That was happening. So I waited, and sure enough, he showed up, and I gave him back the money. I felt pretty good about it, but I will say that, you know, I was hoping that at 18 he would pull out a little hundo and give me something, but, you know,
of course.
I left empty-handed.
Out of $5,000, he's like, thank you, and just left.
Nothing. Oh. Nothing for the kid. Wow.
Well, yeah, that's what happened.
You did the right thing anyway, Ray.
Yeah.
But if he'd have known in advance, he would have peeled off a hundo before he returned it, right?
Hey, congratulations. Here's your $4,900.
That is I know I'm Mr. Bad Example, but that's Uncle Billy and It's a Wonderful Life. That's what the entire situation he just described right there.
Okay.
Pretty timely 1946 timely? Movie reference.
Let's try line 6. That really brought it home.
Greg on from Long Beach. Hi, Greg. What's going on? Happy Friday.
Hey, how are you guys?
We are good.
Long-time listener.
Thank you, man.
Hey, I live out in Arizona. I was getting ready to go on a trip. It was 125 out there. It was supposed to be 130 the next day. Hottest day ever last year. My AC goes out. I call the AC guy. He tells me, all right, it's going to be $7,100. I said, just do it. My wife and I are going on our month-long motorhome trip. We're going along. No bill. You know, he's not taking the money out of our account.
Wow.
So finally I called him at the end of the month, and I go, hey, why haven't you taken the money? And he's all, you know what? I would have never known if you didn't call me.
Wow.
$7,000, dude.
$7,100. The guy's the coolest guy. I mean, he came over right that morning, but he's like, you know, if you would have, he's all, I'll buy you a beer. I don't care.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. That's good.
He's a good guy, and he's like, no, you know what? Most people wouldn't even have called me, and I don't even know if I would have ever noticed it.
Yeah. Well, you did the right thing. I'm happy to hear your story, Greg. Thanks very much. By the way, 125 degrees, Kevin?
Yeah. Happens.
Crazy.
Happens in Phoenix. It does.
Let's go to Wisconsin, line one. This is going to be our friend Robert checking in on the Kevin and Bean Show. Robert, thank you for streaming the show. How are you today?
Good. How about yourself?
We are good. Thank you.
So this is a crazy topic, man. We got a lot of listeners who actually are pretty good people.
Yeah.
Well, I was at a Chase Bank in Hawaiian Gardens, and I was walked in, and next to where you pay, put your withdrawal slips and things like that, I start filling one out. I thought it was my wallet, and so I picked it up, put it in my pocket. When I did, I realized how fat it was. It wasn't my wallet, not with that much cash in it. I pull it out. And there's probably close, I mean, I didn't count it, but it was probably close to $2,000 in $100 bills. Oof. And so I start looking around, seeing if anybody's missing a wallet, because I don't want to just hand it to anybody, and didn't want to look through it because it looks, you know, you got cameras and everything like that.
So right.
I started asking, you know, hey, is there anybody that's missing anything? The guy starts, you know, this Asian guy starts tapping his wallet, looking for his wallet, and goes, oh, it's mine. And I go, well, what color is it? You know, he explains it, it's his. And I hand it back to him. And him and his buddy start counting the cash three different times. Start looking through the wallet, everything like that.
Sort of accusing you of stealing it?
Basically, they were looking at it. They looked for their cards. They looked for everything in it. And then they started looking me up and down like, I wonder if this guy stole anything. And then they start talking to each other, and I didn't understand it. But they looked at me through the whole entire line, kept looking backwards at me, checking me out.
Robert's just very suspicious looking, you guys,
right?
I guess so. But yeah, I gave him his cash back, and he ended up looking like I was stealing from him.
Hmm. And any reward for you?
No. He didn't even say thank you. To be honest, he never even said thank you.
Maybe he didn't. You didn't understand it.
Right, exactly. All right. Thank you for the call. Let's do one more real fast because this is the one I actually meant to go to. Adelina, line two. She's in Anaheim. This one does not involve cash.
All right. Adelina, hi.
Hi.
Thank you for listening and holding on.
Yes. So last year, I won the Kings of Leon.
I'm sorry. We're not going to be able to talk to you because of your phone.
Oh. Mm. Talk a little bit softer.
Hello?
Hello? Okay.
Hello?
Yeah, I mean, okay.
Mm.
Okay. I don't feel like, all right, try to tell us.
Okay, so I won the Kings of Leon London trip.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Oh, no.
Thank you, though, for calling. We appreciate it. Just your phone is real bad. It's just painful for people to listen to.
It's a good way to go out on, though.
I think so. We like to end strong. We're not worthy, you guys. We're not worthy. Writer, producer, composer, rapper, producer, songwriter, and the king of G-Funk, Warren G, in CD with us right now on the Kevin Beach Show on K-Rock.
What's up, man?
How are you, sir? Great to see you.
I'm good. Cooling, chilling.
Warren had a more interesting morning than you folks know, but he's okay, and he's happy to be here.
Yeah.
The reason we were lucky enough to have Warren come in today is he's got a documentary getting ready to debut on YouTube Premium.
Yes, indeed.
It's called G-Funk. Now, it's premiering on July 11th, and this is the new kind of upgraded pay version of YouTube, right?
Yes.
How did if you don't mind me asking a business question, how did you end up going with YouTube? Because I'm sure there are a lot of people who would love to have distributed this, Netflix and others.
Yeah, well, YouTube is giving us a chance to, well, they're giving us ownership back, you know, but when you're dealing with the other companies, they want to take ownership.
Sure.
Period, and that's it, done. So it's good for us to be able to get, you know, ownership back, and then we could possibly relicense again.
Sure. Why not, right? Yeah. All right. In 2018, why is now the time to look back on that seminal period of West Coast hip-hop called G-Funk?
Well, I mean, I wanted to do it, you know, years ago, but it was so many, you know, like companies that wanted to change a lot, and I wanted it to be 100% authentic.
Mm-hmm.
So I just kind of backed up off of it for a while, but I still had the idea there.
Everybody came to you and said, we love it, but let's add our spin. And you're like, no,
yeah,
no, thank you.
Yeah, they wanted to change it.
Yeah.
And so I just backed up off of it for a while. And, you know, one day I was down in Orange County at the observatory doing a show, and I ran into these two young kids. One of them name was Carm Gill, and who was actually the director. And they filmed my show for me and told me they would send me the footage. So I let them film me. They shot me the footage. I loved it.
Wow.
So I told him to follow me. So he followed me for a while doing, you know, filming my shows and documenting me just going around.
Did you not know him before that point?
No.
You didn't know
him? I didn't know him.
Wow.
I feel like this is almost everything with you. Everything is serendipity. Like things that happen. Granted, not the whole trying to get your stepbrother to listen to Snoop. No, I'm saying trying to get Dre to finally listen to you and Snoop and your music.
Right.
That took a long time. But it seems like everything after that, from being asked to be on Poetic Justice, to it's just everything is serendipitous for you now.
Yeah. I mean,
does it feel that way to you?
He's like, there's a lot
of
between
that. I just keep going. You know, I just stay working and keep going.
Is that a mindset that you have to have to sort of survive? Because if you pin your hopes on one thing and it doesn't happen, then you get disappointed.
I mean, you just got to, I mean, you run into, you know, potholes here and there, but you just got to keep going. I'm like, you know what, just like getting here today.
Mm-hmm. Tell people what getting here today happened.
Now, when we had an accident,
right in
the intersection, boom, it was heavy too. Like I thought I was going to go through the window, but I immediately jumped out the car and I said, I got to get an Uber because I got to make it over here to get on the show. So I told the driver, if the car is drivable, just meet me back at the radio station.
Wow.
So I got back over here, but.
They say that a lot of people who it looks like have good luck, it's because they are prepared and they work hard and they take advantage of opportunities. And it sounds like that's kind of where it's been for you for all these years. There's never been a time since that music that you and Dre and Snoop and the rest made back in the early 90s where those songs have been off the radio for a minute, has there? I mean, there's never been a day where you haven't heard yourself on the radio, I bet.
Man, I'm in heavy rotation across the world still, man. It's crazy. I didn't know that the music I was doing was going to still be playing 24 years later.
When you did Regulate, did you know it was a better song than most you'd heard? Did you have a feeling like this is a special?
I knew it was good, but the main thing, I knew it was different, you know, because a lot of the hip-hop back then was just more dark and going over, you know, different, you know, heavy drums and stuff like that. So I was like, you know, let me find some music that sounds good, that's not hip-hop, a hip-hop feel, and let's do hip-hop over it to make it different and sound good.
Perfect. I wanted to ask you about that because I'm going to play a little bit of Michael McDonald, You Keep Believing.
Oh, yeah.
And this is, you'll recognize it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, when I hear that now, I think of Warren G way before I think of Michael McDonald.
Strings.
How did you discover this?
Yeah,
My parents used to play it.
Your parents would play it.
Back in the day when I was a young kid. And, you know, as I got older and got into production, I used to go get records and dig and just listen to music. So I ran across the record. And
you
know,
just heard
like
that
I said, I wanted to be
beginning.
Different. And when I heard that, I was like, damn, this would really sound really good with some hip-hop on it, you know, and it'd be totally different from what everybody else is doing.
Well, you were right.
That was my favorite part of the documentary is you all talked about your parents listening to everything, Motown, Isley Brothers, everything.
Yeah.
You would hear it. You would walk out into the parties dancing with your aunts and uncles, everyone. And then I think it was Chuck D that said, the East Coast missed funk entirely. Yeah. It just didn't happen on the East Coast. How blessed were we out here on the West that then Warren G's like, it's going to be my thing. It's going to it.
Well, we got to get, you know, George Clinton and Parliament Funkadelic and, you know, all the groups from back then. Mm-hmm. Was
right.
That was like religion here on the West Coast. Yeah. You know, it was just a smooth feel.
I see what you're doing with your hand right there.
Warren G is here. We're talking about his film premiering on YouTube Premium on July the 11th. It's called G-Funk. One quick question before the break, and that is, I was, in addition to all of the new interviews with people we've mentioned, like Ice Cube and Snoop Dogg, Russell Simmons, Wiz Khalifa, Too Short, George Clinton, they're all in the movie. Yeah. I was astonished at how much footage you have, Warren.
Yeah.
From the early days when you guys were nowhere near a record deal and it was just you and Nate Dogg and Snoop just fooling around at parties. Like, who was filming all this stuff and why, and how was it kept for all these years?
Well, I had a guy just named James follow me everywhere I went. You know, every time I was in the studio, every time I was going to the studio. And, you know, we was all together, me, Snoop, and Nate. So everywhere I went, the camera was following me. Even overseas, I had the camera following me overseas.
Why do you think you made the decision to have them follow you? Because that has to, did you know, have confidence that 213 was going to grow into something?
I don't know what it different, was, man. Or, I was just like, just film. Come just on, film. Just film. You know,
if we don't use it, we don't. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, and he also was doing a show back then too, a little hip hop TV show, but That's what made me ask him to follow me. It was sort of like the same story with Carm. I told him to come on, follow me and document. And the crazy thing is, I said in the movie, I'm doing my documentary right now, and that was 20 something years.
Yeah, it sure was. Well, it's the footage from the early days is extraordinary. Much more with our guest Warren G here on the World Famous K-Rock. When do we return right after this?
Oh, yeah.
Well, 106.7 K-Rock is KROQ. This is the Kevin and Bean Show. It's 8:51. We play that because Warren G is in the studio with us.
Come on with the come on, right? Oh,
yeah. And I want to ask you a question because that is one of my all-time favorite songs. Is that better? Or is California Love better? Got to pick.
Well, you got to look at which one is still in rotation.
And both.
You know, Regulators in heavy rotation
all right.
across the world. You
I can accept
every
that.
Day. You know, I mean, California Love, that's a really great song, mm-hmm. and it's a hit record. But that's a California song.
Yeah.
You know, Regulators, like, more international.
I can accept that. That's a good answer.
That's a good answer.
Sure.
Kevin's been trying to decide in his mind, Warren, here's what you don't know, what's the best rap song of all time, and he's had a tie up until this point. So I think you finally just won him over to regular. And by the way, I'm glad we played that because part of what I love about your movie that Warren G is here to talk about, the documentary called G-Funk on YouTube Premium starting July 11th, is it's a sweet love letter to your dear friend Nate Dogg, who, by the way, we didn't get the chance to meet, but he seemed like such a wonderful person.
He's a great guy. Real great. Funny, just like we all, me, Snoop, and Nate, whenever we get together, we like the Three Stooges. But he was a real good dude, very talented. And
for sure.
You know, a lot of people ask me, like, you know, how does it feel? It's terrible, because that was one of the only guys that I really had a perfect chemistry with as far as making music. And we was together, even though I did solo records, that was my partner, you know, that, you know, so it's
yeah,
like,
you really had such complementary skills, and it's like you could read each other's minds, it seemed like, sometimes.
Since high school.
Yeah.
My God.
Yeah, elementary school, actually.
Wow.
You know, we all came up right from elementary all the way up. And it's you know, that's why I haven't just, you know, been consistently putting music out, because it's like, dang. When I do a beat, I'm like, Nate would have killed this with me,
right?
You know, so it's back and forth. But I'm gonna put some music out along with this documentary.
Oh, you know? Great!
Nice. Yeah,
and you and Snoop are as close as ever. You still see him a lot?
Definitely. Yeah, we talk all the time. You know, he be on the road a lot. I be on the road a lot. But when we get a chance, we hang out. I was just with him not too long ago. We did a Actually, it was one of the games for the Cavs against the Warriors. Mm-hmm, it was
right.
One of those games. You know.
Now, Nate Dogg was Snoop's cousin, right?
No. Just friends.
Okay. Yeah. You were by marriage stepbrothers with Dr. Dre, though.
Yeah.
That's for real. Uh-huh. How's your relationship with Dre now? You see him much?
I haven't seen him in a while. You know, he busy doing his thing and doing what he do.
He's busy being the richest man in the world.
And I, you know, like I said, I be on the road doing this here and there. But, you know, whenever we get a chance, we link up and, you know, see each other. We may be at the same event like Coachella. We was there one time together. I didn't even know he was going to be there, but he was with another group. And I was doing the Heineken House, and then I found out through some of his guys because they came to see me at the Heineken House, and then I went back over to where he was and chopped it up with him for a minute. And then,
that's great.
You're a better man than me because I watched that documentary and I was pissed at Dre
because he wasn't listening to your music at all.
He wasn't listening to it, and then you show up to the airport to go on the Chronic tour, and they're like, no,
"Yeah, but that
Warren.
Wasn't his fault." Now, you know the music part. As far as listening to me and Snoop, it's like when you like I do it too to serve, you know, like what you trying to get me to hear this for? You don't know what you're doing. You don't know, you know, like the big brother, little bitty brother thing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, but then I grew up.
Can I stay mad at Shug?
I mean,
I'm going to.
I mean, I'm glad he did. He was the way he was because it made it. It blessed me to be in the position I'm in right now.
To do all the stuff on your own, for sure.
Right. Yeah. Now, Kevin says Shug is a pussy. And if Shug ever gets out of jail, Kevin says he'd like to say that to his
Stop
face.
It. What is wrong with you?
That's what I've heard. All right. One last question from me, Warren, and that is so many legends in your film, like I mentioned, with like Ice Cube and Too Short and George Clinton, all these. And there are a couple of references to what people think about hip-hop today. But I don't think I heard from you. What are you hearing and liking in hip hop today, if anything?
I mean, I like, you know, a lot of the new artists, you know, like Kendrick. He's very talented.
Yeah, he works at any era, right?
And he just takes it to another level.
Well, he sort of does what you were trying to do too, which is to take music, sort of jazz inspired a lot, and that does it not normally with rap and put rap with it.
Right, right.
Sort of does that too,
and that's another example of G-Funk, you know what I'm saying? Like, it, you know, in his music, you can hear it. You know, him, J. Cole, he's very talented.
Very much, yeah.
Drake is very talented. I like 21 Savage. He's a roughneck, but I like him. I like Nipsey Hussle.
All right. So you know, it hasn't. You're not an old man yet, yelling at the kids to get off your lawn. You're still down with what
they're
doing.
No, I'm riding the mix with them.
All right. The documentary is G-Funk. It's premiering July 11th on YouTube. Yeah. Before we go, we got a final minute with our guest Warren G here in studio on K-Rock. We call this 60 Seconds with Kevin. Is going to rapid fire questions at you, Warren. Okay. You just answer with the first thing that comes to your mind, and we're off.
What would most people be surprised to find out about you?
That I like to cook.
You like to cook. Yeah. What were you like in high school?
Player.
At one point in your movie, Snoop quit rap, threw away 100 pieces of paper, and you went right to the trash and took them out. Is that true?
Yes.
Snoop was so frustrated that he wanted to quit, and you said no.
I told him, no, I ain't going to let you give up on your dream. So I grabbed him out the trash and took him right back to him.
What is the movie you have to finish watching every time you come across it?
Oh, wait. Entrapment.
All right. Would you consider what we do here a gangsta party?
Yeah.
Yes!
That was yes with a giant question mark on it.
Now you guys OGs.
When you guys started selling candy...
Oh, ask about the Voltron crew.
When you guys started selling candy as kids, who was the best? You guys would go door to door and literally sell candy.
A guy named Antonio Red.
He could sell anything.
Oh, he was good.
Hi, ma'am. my name is Antonio Red. Snoop said it, and you know that's he was talking about Antonio Red, a guy that we grew up with also.
you know, from elementary and Pop Warner, playing Pop Warner football.
Did he make something of himself like all the rest of the crew?
Everybody. Everybody that was in there either got jobs, you know, and because it taught us, you know, to stay out.
To hustle.
Yeah, to hustle. And, you know, as a teen growing up, you know, in our neighborhood, you automatically get labeled as being a part of the neighborhood there. Mm-hmm. No matter what city you go to, and you say, okay, I'm from Long Beach, y'all, he a Crip. You know, and I'm like, but we just was just trying to make a way to get out of the hood and make something of ourselves, and you know, and still give back. Yeah.
All right, Warren, I know you got to go. You have another interview. We really appreciate your time today.
It's all good.
It's really exciting for us. The music documentary is called G-Funk. Mm-hmm. We've all seen it and loved it. Okay. And it premieres July 11th on YouTube Premium.
Yes, indeed.
Thank you, Warren. We appreciate
you
coming.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
I'm going to say it is weird, and I don't like it.
Agree.
I'm not down with this.
Yeah, this is not okay.
It's too far.
You guys are both too far. You're both no's on this?
This? Yeah.
I'm a no.
So they take something out of your body and it's just trash as far as you're concerned. It should just be burned. You should just pretend it never happened.
Yes, because what am I going to do with it?
Well, here's the story that we started yesterday's show with, and it bears repeating because Allie missed it, and I really want to see her enjoy this. Blogger turns skin removed in designer vagina surgery into necklace. So the topic is going to be, you had a medical procedure and something was taken either off or out of your body. And rather than just put it in the medical waste can, you talked the personnel at the hospital into giving it to you. So now you have a piece of you somewhere in a jar. That's what we're looking for right now.
Why do you want a piece of you in a jar?
Or at around your neck.
520-1067. Kevin, if you had, and we'll tell the story about the designer vagina surgery here in a second. Okay. But if you had a, here's just an example. I don't know if anyone's ever done this. Maybe we'll find out on the phones. But let's say you went in for a brain tumor operation.
Right.
They took out a brain tumor.
Right.
Wouldn't there be some strength in having that tumor in a jar, put it on your mantle at home, and going, I beat that mother effer.
No.
That tumor right there, that tumor came for me, and I won.
Here's the thing. I don't have to question, hey, should I keep that and look at it on the mantle, like Bean says, and say, hey, effer, I won, or should I not keep it? Because that thought never enters my mind. They take it out. They dispose of it. And then I'm healthier, and I move on with my life.
Right, but they're taking out something that was significant. It potentially could have killed you,
right,
but it didn't.
Right.
I can see wanting to have that victory reminder around in my house. I can
you
see
could
that.
You could see that. I couldn't.
But I'm telling you, I believe in our listeners, and I believe they're going to come through at 1-800-520-1067 with body parts that have been saved. Here's the story for Tracy Kiss is her name. She went to the gym within the last few months, Allie, and she realized that there was a lot of pain happening. And she had felt it before. It was a burning sensation after exercise. And she went to the doctor, and it turned out that she had a cyst. And a cyst had developed in her lady parts because of friction of the excess skin on her labia.
Oh.
We heard from a lot of people in yesterday's show who begged me to never say the word labia again on the
right.
show.
Yeah, that would be great.
Good work. She was advised to have it removed after the operation. She asked the surgeon if she could keep the skin, and she proudly displayed it at home in a jar full of surgical fluid. So she kept her labia in a jar, and then at some point, and maybe this is too much information, but at some point...
We're way past too much information.
At some point, it started to turn gray
and
not be attractive. It didn't have...
Oh, as opposed to when it was that hot-looking labia
right?
in a jar.
Checked out that jar.
At some point, at the beginning, it was like a kind of an attractive pink, and now it's turned all gray. Oh. So she decided, hey, I still want to keep this, but I need some more attractive way to keep it. So what she did is she went through the steps and turned it into jewelry, and now she wears her labia in a necklace around her neck.
I sort of have a boner.
See, I told you.
No, you did not.
So she is proudly displaying it. And not everybody is on board, but a lot of people understand totally where she's coming from. She says it's a good reminder that people should speak out about female genital surgery, and she hopes that it will be a talking point. She hopes that people will ask her about it, and she can have a discussion.
Who's going to say, hey, those earrings look like your labia. Let's talk about it. Honestly, that's going to happen anywhere, anytime.
What kind of happy hour is she going to?
She's not looking for conversation about it.
Well, let's see.
She's
why...
wearing earrings.
Let's see what's going on with Erica in Redlands on line two at 1-800-520-1067. Erica knows what's up, and we welcome you to the Kevin DeBean Show. What's going on?
Hi, good morning.
Good morning, crazy person.
Well, this happened when I was a kid. I was kind of a weird kid. And I had to have my tonsils removed, and I talked the doctor into letting me take them home in a jar.
Mm-hmm. And do you still have them today?
No, I think my mom flushed them down the toilet.
Yeah, because your mom is a right-thinking American. And then you got put right into therapy, didn't you, Erica?
I support you, Erica. I think you did the right thing, and your mom's a bad lady. Thank you for the call.
By the way, Bean, just for the record, kept his donkey's balls.
Oh, is that code?
No.
Okay.
He owned a donkey, and he helped cut off the balls.
Well, I was involved in neutering my pet, yes.
Put them in a jar and brought them to K-Rock at work, where he kept that jar of donkey balls for, I want to say, 5-6 years.
Yeah, and then it started leaking, which was unfortunate.
Oh, my God.
So that's who I work with.
That's why we don't share a lot. That's why we don't share a locker anymore. Hey, let's go back to Redlands and talk to Hector, line 5. I don't know what's going on out at Redlands, but he's got a hell of a story. Welcome to the show, sir.
Yeah, what's up, Kevin Bean?
909 coming through, Hector.
Hey, you there?
Yeah, we're here. What happened?
Okay, my son was born with an extra finger on his left hand, so he had a little finger coming off his pinky. Doctor told us to tie it with the fishing string, and it eventually fell off in a couple of days. So now we have it in the closet like a little black raisin.
Why do you have it in the closet?
I don't know. My wife just felt weird throwing it away, so we just kept it. And
doesn't she feel weirder about it now?
Sorry?
Doesn't she feel weird about it now?
No, it's still pretty cool. We still have it.
All right.
Okay. See, when the party gets slow, he can go to his closet and pull something out to get it going again.
Yeah, that's what he wants for a party.
Let's take George in Torrance, line 6, up next on the Kevin and Bean Show.
Hey, crazy George.
Hey, guys. When I was about 8 years old, I was taken down to TJ, got my appendix removed, was kept above the refrigerator afterwards.
First of all,
let's start at the beginning.
A lot to unpack here, George.
So you said TJ.
Who made the decision? Hey, you know what? We need surgery. Let's leave America.
Basically, the doctors couldn't find what was wrong with me. So as soon as we went down to TJ, within 2 minutes of being examined by the doctor, he said, I want to put you in the emergency room right away.
Yeah, but they take everybody's appendix out when you go to the doctor in TJ.
It's very possible there was nothing wrong with you, George.
And how's it look all these years later in a jar above your fridge?
I have no idea. It was probably flushed down the toilet years and years ago.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right, so you don't have it anymore. All right, thank you for the call. Appreciate that. Here's a text from the 951. I'm a nurse practitioner, and people always want to keep their bits and pieces. One lady wanted to keep the staples I took out of her scalp. One patient I met keeps his dismembered finger in a jar and takes it with him when he goes out.
No!
Keep that in mind when you're on Tinder this weekend. It could be that dude. All right, let's try it while we got...
Let's go to Al. I'd like to talk to him in Duarte, because he sort of did the same thing as the girl in this story. Hey, Al.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
We are good. How are you?
Good. When I was in high school, I had my wisdom teeth removed, and I hung on to them for a few years until I was in my mid-20s or so. I always had a plan to turn them into cufflinks, so I found a jeweler who was willing to do that, so I took them my teeth and... You know, a few hundred dollars later, I had a nice pair of white cufflinks that I used to wear.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have a winner.
I don't know if it's true that.
The kids love that.
Cufflinks, so that's a conversation starter, right, Al?
Yeah, it is. I mean, most people don't realize what it is. Some people actually think it's kind of gross, but, you know, it's one of a kind, and you won't find it anywhere else.
I mean, for a good reason.
That keep doing what you're doing. Hey, let's do one more.
The kids are really excited about this topic.
Let's do one more. Let's make it Jason in Simi Valley. It's a weird thing to keep here.
Hey, Jason.
What'd it do?
Oh, Jason.
You kept what?
You kept what?
Jason.
So I had kids at a very early age. 20 was my first. Okay. Second one 18 months later.
Okay.
I had a third one. After I went to a urologist to get a vasectomy,
he said
I was too young. later, I have a third kid. At this time, my wife is in nursing school, and she asked the practitioner if she can come in the room with and assist. And sure enough, doctor lets my wife come in and
what?
Assist. Somehow she convinces him and wants to make sure that my one-inch portion of my vasodeferens was kept and very secured in a jar.
She took your penis, home. Didn't she? Be honest.
So you have the piece that they pulled out when they did the vasectomy. You still have it in a jar.
You know, I don't have it to this day. We kept it for 5 years as a novelty thing. This was 20 years ago.
Did you, as Bean says, bring it out when the party got slow? Get it going again?
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. So your fourth kid was just a little thing in a jar then.
Exactly.
All right. Oh, thank you for the call, Jason. Jason. Appreciate that.
Hey, great talking to everybody.
See, I told you our listeners would come through.
Yeah.
That was fun, right?
Yeah, that was great.
All right. Here's the deal, you guys. We're clearing those lines so that we can invite you to call right now if you want a double dose of Foo Fighters. Cal Jam 17 this weekend at Glen Helen.
Which, by the way, is Foo Fighters and Queens of the Stone Age and Cage the Elephant and Liam Gallagher and Royal Blood. It's going to be awesome.
Ridiculous.
Amazing show. Plus, you also get access to Kevin Amin's exclusive Breakfast with Foo Fighters at the HD Radio Soundspace at K-Rock on Tuesday morning. You win both. We're looking for you to sing right now. We're looking for Foo Fighters fan songs, originals, parodies, raps, or slam poetry. It's up to you. 1-800-520-1067. We'll give away some tickets next on K-Rock. Thunder?
Oh,
Thunder?
Bean.
I can't do it the way Dan does it.
Well, don't try.
I shouldn't try. Okay. You're right about that. Hey, welcome into another all-new Kevin and Bean Show here for a Monday morning. Thanks so much for listening. Quick reminder, by the way, and I know I mentioned this a couple times already, but I'm going to keep hammering it until you do it. Please text the word Harvey to 90999 to make a one-time and very speedy $10 donation to the American Red Cross to help those people who are in just desperate, desperate times. In Texas right now, just catastrophic flooding. If you didn't see anything on it over the weekend, it's real bad, you guys. It's hard to even imagine 50 inches of rain coming down over the course of a few days, but they could very much use your help. So 90999. Allie, you brought this to our attention last week, a very funny article by, coincidentally, somebody that you are friends with, Allison Siegel, who's on the line.
Oh, she's a delight.
She is a delight, and she's so funny. You should definitely follow her on Twitter, at OnlineAllison. She's hilarious. But the article is 9 of the weirdest dating apps to try, because what do you really have to lose? Allison writes for all sorts of great publications, including EliteDaily.com, and with XO Jane, Hello Giggles, Vice, a whole bunch more. And she joins us on the phone right now. Hey, Allison, how are you?
Good. How are you guys?
So happy to have you on. Say hi to Allie.
Hey, Allie.
Hi,
how
Allison.
Are you?
Great. How are you?
Good. My name, buddy.
I know.
So are you a single gal, Allison?
I am a single gal.
So when you were researching this article and you found some of these crazier dating apps, did you actually, like, sign up and, like, check it out and dig around under the hood to see what they're all about?
You're asking right now if I'm a member of Juggalove.com is yes, what I'm gathering.
Yes, I am. That's exactly what my thought was.
No, I have not signed up, but I'm not going to lie. Hot Sauce Passions is of curiosity to me.
All right. Tell me about Hot Sauce Passions.
Okay. So Hot Sauce Passions is a website for people who love things like Tapatio or Cholula. My curiosity, though, with Hot Sauce Passions is that it also includes a book club and a webcam on the website. So I'm not really sure exactly if it's a dating service or what kind of thing this is, but the website says that it's a social network, a dating website, and a place to find emotional support if you love hot sauce.
That has a lot going on.
Yes.
Imagine loving hot sauce so much, though, that that is your defining characteristic. Like some people would be what their favorite sports team is or even what their religion is or something like that. Hot sauce is your thing. I mean, that's hard to imagine there are enough people to keep an app like this going.
And also, what does a first date look like between two people who love hot sauce?
I think you know, Allison. I think you know.
I think you just have to one-up each other on who likes it hotter, I would imagine.
What's the aftermath of a first date?
Well,
yes.
That's disturbing.
That is a great
question. Maybe that's where the webcam comes in. It's a whole other fetish.
Yeah, that's the webcam fetish part.
You mentioned farmersonly.com, probably I would imagine it's the most well-known of the apps that you reviewed in this piece, right?
Yes, for sure. And they have those great commercials.
I do love the commercials and the song. I mean, it's catchy.
Yeah, they have a good jingle.
Sure.
You consider a farmer, Allie? What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. They have the flannels. They have the good beers. The cowboy hat, I could take it or leave it. But the tractors, I'm also very into as a means of transportation. I think that's fantastic.
I wasn't surprised that there is a website for juggalos and juggalettes. That just makes sense because that's a special breed of people, the Insane Clown Posse fans. But I was surprised to see you write about a site called clowndating.com. What'd you find out about that?
Okay, so clowndating.com is a website for people who have a clown fetish. Now, a clown fetish entails a very certain type of sexual activity. There's a fetish for everything. But this means you like being spanked with rubber chickens.
Sure.
As one does. That's actually how Allie and I became friends.
Yes.
Okay.
If you want to know the backstory.
It's true.
All right. You like a cream pie to the face.
Oh.
Okay.
Oh. Oh, no, literally. Literally, a pie.
Oh, an actual cream pie. I'm sorry.
Yes.
I misunderstood. Okay.
Yeah, sorry. Should have had the backstory of that. You wear red shoes, the large red shoes, into the bedroom, full clown makeup, the wigs. So that's, if that's your thing, then clown singles is for you.
Okay, but as nearly as you can tell, it's not a joke site that somebody just set up to imagine how funny it would be if there were clown fetishists finding each other. You think this is real and there are members and there are people meeting on a site like that?
Oh, no. Clowns, I've done fetish writing before, and clown dating is an actual real subset of the BDSM kink community.
No
Absolutely.
Kidding. Are they all in on the It movie coming out in a couple of weeks? Is that like the biggest event on their calendar all year long, I would imagine?
Yeah, for many people who have clown fetishes, it was like a seminal movie for their development, for like their sexual development.
This is an educational interview here today.
I'm telling you. Allison's got a lot of info on things we never even thought of. It's amazing.
Bozo the Clown, Ronald McDonald, and like Stephen King's It were seminal features in like their...
How about that? A deep dive into clown fetishing.
Yeah.
How about, there's one I just noticed. There's one on the list, and we're talking to a writer, Allison Siegel, about her article on EliteDaily.com, 9 of the Weirdest Dating Apps to Try. And there's one that I just noticed that we've had a lot of experience with here on the Kevin Bean Show over the years, because a lot of times we'll hold concert events and we'll be at a hotel the same time that the furry convention is going on.
Yeah.
We have met hundreds of furries over the years working here for K-Rock. And I don't know how you found the furry community. They are the nicest people in the world, Allison.
So nice. I've interviewed a lot of furries before, too, and they are like the sweetest, kindest, most inclusive people ever.
Totally.
Yes. And it's kind of like a deviation of the anime community.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that they're actually, the whole sexual connotation to their subculture isn't necessarily true.
That was my understanding, too, is that they are furries who happen to have sex with other people who are into furries, just like anybody would happen to have sex with people. But the furry is kind of separate from the sexuality, is what it seemed like to me, if I'm not wrong on that.
Yeah, absolutely. I got the same feeling from that we tend to sexualize what isn't necessarily a sexual, you know, instance, that they're mostly into, you know, the drawing aspect of it and... like the anime, the large costumes, the getting together, things like that, and then we've kind of perverted whatever it is that they're doing.
Exactly. We're the freaks on the outside of the furry community.
Yes, literally. I think we are the ones with the fetish.
All right. Last one I wanted to ask you about, Zombie Passions. That's a dating site?
Yes, Zombie Passions, for if you like long, slow walks around the mall and eating brains.
And what are these people like? Who are the Zombie Passion folks?
Listen, this one I think is mostly a joke, clearly.
Okay.
But if you like horror movies and if this is kind of in your wheelhouse, I would go to Zombie Passions, find a like-minded zombie movie aficionado.
All right. I bet this is just scraping the surface, by the way. I bet now you're going to get a lot of people who are going to be reaching out to you telling you of other crazy sites that exist that you didn't even know about.
Yeah, maybe people can find me on Juggalove as Clown Daddy Whoop.
EliteDaily.com is where you find the article. Look for Allison on Twitter at OnlineAllison. A lot of fun talking to you. Thanks for coming on the Kevin and Bean Show.
Thanks. Have a good one.
Building a second Hollywood sign because too many people are trying to go to the original Hollywood sign is one of the dumbest ideas I've ever heard.
And by dumbest, you mean best.
Why not build 50 Hollywood signs then?
Right?
That way everybody keep people guessing. People could take a picture of the Hollywood sign from wherever they are in Southern California. How about that? Is that a does that solution make everyone happy? We'll talk about it coming up on K-Rock. It's 6:33. What's on your mind, Allie?
Oh, we haven't had a chance to talk about this yet.
Okay.
But I'm glad I can bring it up now. A lot of people ask, is this for real? Is Bean's life for real? The things that he says, mm-hmm. the way that he acts, is that really who he is?
Well, he's pretty extreme. A lot of times mm-hmm. the stories we tell are pretty out there.
And yeah.
They're, I mean, maybe we exaggerate some for comedy, mm-hmm. but for the most part, Bean is Bean.
Yeah, and sometimes yep. he says
we
things.
We know you're there.
What's
that
going on right
he doesn't quite understand or a little weird, right. maybe a little bit.
Uh-huh.
But when I got this text from Bean's wife Donna the other day, I thought this needs to be chatted about. Bean, sit back for a minute, if you will.
We're not going to need you just for a second.
I'm going to need some answers.
Why is the call coming from inside the house?
first one, it starts with, it's always my pleasure to have the sad truths of our lives exploited for you guys and your enjoyment. I knew the next text was going to be good.
Yes.
Again, this text from Bean's wife, Donna.
Okay.
Please ask Bean to tell you about inviting a 20-year-old co-ed jogger to come to our house to take a shower today. What? What are you talking about?
I have a lot of questions here. I have a lot of questions. Like, if she's jogging, you clearly weren't.
Right?
It's not like you were running alongside her going, hey, you need a place to shower.
What is going on?
What could possibly have happened?
Bean, what?
In what world, how did this happen?
I suspect Kevin's a little jealous that I came up with this idea before he did.
Are you just running next to joggers right? asking them if they need a shower?
And Bean has a very short window because he's not a jogger, so he can keep up for about 20 seconds and he's got to make it work.
Say yes, or you're going to leave me behind. I need an answer now.
Do you want a shower? And how did she not run immediately the other way?
Why is Donna texting this
because,
to you?
Because she knows how much I love you and care. I want to help you through this.
Right.
What is happening in New Orleans right now?
Is this something we really have
yes.
to talk about?
Yes.
Do I have to give an explanation?
Yes.
It's a very boring story.
We've been sitting on this and it's been killing Allie. Every single day we schedule it and then we bump it. It's killing her.
All right, I will tell you what.
20-year-old co-ed jogger.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Come shower at our house.
Come shower at our house.
Danielle, yes.
Bean has Danielle, he caught her name.
Maybe Bean has more game than anyone knows.
He does.
I couldn't get a 20-year-old to come take a shower at my house if I wanted to, nor would it ever occur to me. Bean's insane.
All right, I will tell you what happened.
Yes.
But I would first like to give you the opportunity to take a stab at it. Take a guess. Under what scenario could that possibly have happened? Because it is accurate. It did happen.
Okay. 20-year-old co-ed jogger.
Mm-hmm. She fell right in front of your house. She scraped up. And she needs to, you know, get the gravel and blood out of her knee.
Oh,
not very sexy, but I don't know.
And you were already on the ground from falling, so she fell right next to you.
All right, here's what happened.
Okay.
We had some very cold weather in the Gulf South in the last week or so, and a bunch of, hard to believe, the pipes in New Orleans that are hundreds of years old don't hold up under a freeze sometimes.
One pipe holds up.
Yeah, Kevin.
Here we go again, right? Why do you try to make all my stories dirty?
That's not what's happening here.
Be proud that your pipe held up,
right?
So a bunch of pipes. A bunch of pipes broke, and they issued a boil water advisory. And because, they had all sorts of silt and dirt and everything and contaminants were getting into the water. So they're like,
get to the sexy.
I'm going to. If you live in these parishes, including Orleans Parish, where I live, then you can't use your water. You have to boil it. Okay. Now, on top of that, because of all the pipes that were turned off and being repaired.
I've already boiled some water. You want to come over to the house?
Because all the pipes were being repaired, the water pressure was super, super low for lots of people. Okay?
Okay.
So many people, they would turn the shower on and there would be almost no water coming out.
Right.
Not enough to take a shower. Okay. So
you went door to door and knocked on all your neighbors' houses?
and looked for the young ones. Yes. So that's the backstory.
Okay. Right?
So I'm out walking Linus the other day, mm-hmm. and here comes jogging Danielle, a woman who I know, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because she is from Pennsylvania, and she is a crazy bulldog person, too. She's got bulldogs at home.
Okay.
So every time we run into each other in the neighborhood, she stops and chats with me, plays with Bruce,
plays with
Linus.
Him. Yeah.
We talk about bulldogs, right?
Yeah.
So we're having a conversation about the cold and whatnot.
Yeah.
Not sexy. And she says, all right, I'll wait till you're done. She says, I got a trip tomorrow. I'm going out of town. I'm going to Michigan, and I can't even take a shower. I can't go to the airport like this. I've got to take a shower before I go away on my trip. And in my mind, I'm thinking, my water pressure's fine.
I know a place you can get wet.
Oh, yeah.
Real wet.
I'll hose you down in the front yard.
Yeah, my pipes might be old, but they're good.
So I'm thinking in my mind, and this is where I think you guys are going to actually be proud of me.
Okay. Nope.
In my mind, I'm thinking, I know this lady. I would not say that we are friends. Like, I don't have her phone number or anything like that. But, I mean, we've run into each other multiple times.
How many is multiple, though? Is it three?
Five, probably. Five times.
Five.
Yeah, so we know each other by sight and by name, okay?
Okay.
So I'm thinking the neighborly thing to do if you find out that somebody you know has no water pressure mm-hmm. is to invite them to your house to take a shower.
But that's a bold move.
Yeah.
For you to invite a 20-year-old girl over to your house to take a shower.
And here's where I think you guys will realize that I am learning as I go. In my mind, I thought that's the polite thing to do is mm-hmm. to help this lady out before her trip. But there's no way to make that offer to her without her potentially misinterpreting it. So
wow.
I did not.
Bean might be learned. What?
So wait. I did not offer her the shower opportunity. I slept on that, kept it under my hat, did not say, hey, come over to the house and take a shower. But then when I got home, I said to my wife, hey, I ran into Danielle. She had no water pressure, and I thought about offering her for a shower. And she said, just this once, though, right? Because if I ever come home and Danielle's taking a shower at the house, you're going to have some splaining to do.
So you went back out and scoured the streets?
I've been
driving around for 8 hours. I can't find her.
I couldn't find her.
I need her naked body in my shower.
I'm furious now. So did I make the right decision by not offering it, or am I a terrible neighbor? Am I not helping somebody out who's got no water pressure?
No. I can answer that honestly. Yeah. You made the right decision
really?
By not offering.
Yes.
100%.
Because it would have been a polite thing to do, I think.
Yes, it would have been. And it also would have come across as creepy.
There's no way to ask a woman into your shower without it.
Nope.
If you've met her five times and the age difference is quite something.
Significant, yes.
I would say no. So were you able to – how did you phrase it then? How did you find her again?
I didn't. That was it. That's the end of the story.
You didn't invite her? Bean did the right thing, apparently.
I didn't invite her into my house to take a shower, and I went back, and I ran it by Donna, and she said I would have been fine if you had done that, but you made the right call by not offering it because there's no way – she would never have talked to you again. She would have pretended she didn't see you. She never would have seen the bulldogs again. She would have changed her route. She might have even moved out of the city if you had invited her.
Do you sit on your little porch every day
yes.
and knitting or crocheting or whatever you do and watch for her to run in front of your house?
Please come by. Please.
My shower works so well.
Where are you?
Our little bean's growing up.
He's growing up.
Thank you for doing
that. So sweet. Some jobs you can just you can size it up and mm-hmm. you can just say to yourself, I would be terrible at that job.
Okay.
This would be not a job that I could keep more than a couple days. And that's, for me, that's a costume character.
Really?
Costume characters at birthday parties and mm-hmm. stuff. Because I feel like there's a lot of little kids that are dicks. There's a lot of adults that are dicks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like a Santa in a mall. Who wants that job?
Yeah, you're at the mercy of a lot of people, for sure.
Right. And you have to behave because you're representing someone else, basically.
Sure.
So I played this audio first thing this morning, but a 55-year-old woman got drunk and, basically tried to have sex with the Easter Bunny. I mean, that's basically what happened. Here's the story.
A trip to Richland Carousel Park in Mansfield is like taking a step back to a simpler time when life moved at a slower pace.
We focus on the children. That is our main focus, is to provide a good time for children and for families.
So they had a line, and they had an Easter bunny, mm-hmm. and everybody was standing in line waiting to get their picture taken with the Easter bunny until...
The operators of Carousel Park thought they had a nice promotion to get families through the turnstiles on Saturday. A chance to pose for photos with the Easter bunny. But keep an eye on 54-year-old LaDonna Hewitt of Mansfield.
Yeah, she was drunk, and she decided that she needed some alone time with the Easter bunny.
Yeah.
Yep.
A little gyrating on the bunny, a little grinding.
Right.
According to witnesses, Hewitt was drunk, grabbed the person in the rabbit costume in what they call inappropriate ways, and made lewd comments, all in full view and within earshot of families at the indoor park. One of the witnesses decided to call Mansfield Police.
Now, she was grinding on him. She, at one point, it looks like, I just posted the video, or I'm going to post the video on my Twitter, at the Kevin Ryder. Looks like she reached down between his legs.
Oh, no.
Yes. I mean, she was really...
looking for the carrot. Is that what we're saying?
Yes, that's what we're
Got
saying.
Got it.
We received a report from a citizen, an unusual report from a citizen that called us to the Richland Carousel Park of a intoxicated female doing some lewd acts on the Easter Bunny.
Now imagine the guy or girl in the Easter Bunny outfit.
Right.
You're there as the Easter Bunny.
She's like, dude, I just want to get paid for the day and go home.
I'm miserable, but oh, look, the line's not that long. This is not good. I can make it. I can see the finish line. And then this woman happens.
Witnesses say LaDonna Hewitt seemed oblivious to how inappropriate her behavior was in a family setting.
As soon as you think you hear it all, and this obviously this report puts it up to the top where I've never heard of somebody performing those type of acts on the Easter Bunny. And, you know, obviously the environment at the Carousel Park is family-oriented, mm-hmm. and obviously we wouldn't recommend anybody intoxicated to go there.
Witnesses say LaDonna Hewitt compounded her trouble when she then decided to ride a horse on the carousel here in Mansfield. When Mansfield police officers arrived...
So they weren't there yet. They still hadn't arrived after the Easter Bunny accosted.
She still had stuff to work out of her system.
Right. Hewitt was still on the carousel, and witnesses reported she was acting in a way that can only be described as lewd.
On a stationary horse.
Well, sure.
Officers say the 54-year-old Hewitt had slurred speech, bloodshot eyes, was unsteady on her feet, and her breath smelled of alcohol. She was arrested for public drunkenness.
I mean, come on. How much must it suck to be a costume character?
It can't be easy.
Chip, you've done some of this.
It's interesting.
In a lot of different
places. Yeah, in a lot of different capacities in a few years. And it's a weird psychology because people love to tell you, I know you're a person in a costume. And they'll make comments and they're like, is it hot in there? But at the same time...
Wait, why do they want to... Why do they feel the need to do that?
I don't... It's weird. But at the same time, because you have a static face, there's that still that disconnect that, oh, that's not a person. I can do whatever I want to that person.
Oh, what? So that's where that comes from.
So it's like a duality of between, I know you're human, but you're not. So I've been in situations where I've gotten groped doing it. I've gotten beat up. I got jumped once by like three college guys.
And what?
Yeah. Like it's in the it's
and you were in costume.
I was in costume.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, good lord!
Yeah. You don't expect to get jumped.
There's great things about like when the kids are awesome, it's awesome, and then, you know, and parents can be awesome too. But
parents can also be nightmares.
Exactly.
And kids can be nightmares.
You know, grab, punch, all this like that. That's
you got all punched happened. All the time.
It was common. Like it wasn't. I wouldn't say it was.
If
an
you
everyday...
got punched, you would not be surprised.
Yeah.
Wow.
And, yeah. And for instance, so the three college guys, I was young and. I was in a costume, but it was very little, because I could take care of myself, but I happened to be in something that had very, very little visibility and a giant dome.
My real life.
Yeah, like your real life. And they just laid me out, and there's nothing you can do about it. Like, you can't fight back because...
See, that's where that's where I feel like I would get fired.
Right?
Because if somebody punches you...
Trust me, I wanted to. I could.
Of course. You could have,
but
regulated. I'd like to have seen you regulate in a costume. All right, 1-800-520-1067. If you've ever had one of these jobs, imagine being at Chuck E. Cheese. Imagine that with all the kids. I feel like kids' parties would be the worst because kids just seem to—they already have no filter.
Yeah,
and then they grab, punch, hit. They find that funny,
and then adults and alcohol—if alcohol gets involved—that is a whole
then it's
deal
a whole
too.
Another problem. Yeah. Well, that's what this woman was, a 54-year-old woman accosting the Easter Bunny. If you've had this type of job, give us a call, 1-800-520-1067. Or you can also text us at that same number and tell us, is it a good job? Did you enjoy it overall? Chip, would you want to do it again?
I mean, it was a living at the time. I don't know.
So you didn't enjoy it enough as a job that it's not something you would go into on purpose if you didn't, if you didn't need the money.
That's
I assume that's why everybody's doing it. I assume why that's why the mall Santa is doing it. That's why all kids
and it can be
birthday
parties, it can be good money.
It can be okay.
It's just going into it, you know. Things are going to happen.
Things are going to happen.
Yeah.
All right. And that's what we want to hear about.
It's going to go down.
1-800-520-1067. We'll talk to you next.
Oh, man.
I mean, whatever, right? We're going to take your calls on what a job it is to be a costume character. It seems like it would be a bad one. We have Heather on the line from Whittier. Hi, Heather.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for listening and holding on. You were what? Where?
I was Chuck E. Cheese in La Mirada in high school.
And you loved it?
That's not how I would describe it.
Okay, what happened?
So, it was a job.
Right.
I was doing the Chuck E. biz for the birthday song, and I think it was a party of maybe like 8-year-old boys. And the parents, you know, Chuck E. Cheese allows parents to drink, so it gets a little crump sometimes in there. And the boys started screaming, like, Chuck E.'s a girl, and punching me in the boobs.
And
I had like really long hair with I had some braids in the back, and they were like pulling my braids, and I could see the parents just drinking their cheap Chardonnay, and so at some point I was trying to get them off, and I ended up pushing a kid by his face off the chair.
Nice.
Fell backwards.
Right.
And I guess that's when I crossed the line for these parents, and it became outrageous. And that was it. I had enough. I took that head off, which promptly made the little girls' party next to us cry and freak out. And I quit. I was like, I can't be assaulted. I'm like 17.
Yeah. I think laying that kid out must have made the parents go, huh? Deserved it, but no.
It was the best part of that job.
All right. Thank you for the call, Heather. We appreciate it. Your calls and text next at 1-800-520-1067 right after Incubus on K-Rock. And we're talking about being a costume character and what kind of job that must be. After the Easter Bunny was accosted, a woman literally pretty much sat on top of him and just... The article says came on to him.
Right.
But it was a little more than that.
People in the comments on Twitter after you posted the video at Kevin Ryder are saying...
At the Kevin Ryder.
Mm-hmm. Are saying the bunny was kind of into it.
Well, that's my... There's no way the bunny was into it. Did you see her? I mean, come on. Second of all, how do you act as a costume character? You have to behave, right?
Easter bunny...
Can't take that woman and throw her to the ground.
No.
He's Easter Bunny.
Yeah, needs that check at the end of the day.
So he or she is probably just frozen. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But not good.
It just seems like a terrible gig. Let's talk to Sandra in San Dimas. Hello, Sandra.
Hi.
Hi, thanks for listening. Tell us where you worked and how that was.
I worked at Chuck E. Cheese, and every now and then I would get beat up. I really loved the job, but... I didn't love the days that I would get beat up. So, like, one time...
I mean, here's the thing about that, is that most people, you either like your job or you don't, but you don't have every other day I get beat up.
Yeah, that's insane.
Yeah.
Ever!
Well, I'm an editor now, so we're used to abuse, but... but, yeah, back in the day, I loved it, because I got to play video games, and I got to dance around, so that was fun, but I got... When I would get beat up, it'd be kind of rough. There was these pack of feral kids who were chasing me around.
Feral kids.
Yeah. And I attempted to run into my little Chuck E. closet. And
is there video of this? I would pay anything for that.
I
would pay anything for that video.
Well,
Chuck E. is running from kids.
Yeah.
So you didn't make it to the Chuck E. closet this time?
Well, not yet. So as I was running, my shoe came off, my costume shoe.
Oh, no.
And so then you could see, like, my little Converse underneath. So I attempted to put that shoe back on, and in doing so, my head almost came off. So it's kind of a hot mess.
Then I finally got myself put together. I ran to the door. I opened it, and I attempted to close it, but, like, the big leader of the pack, she held it open.
Oh, no.
I was trying to close it, and I was starting to get, you know, an asthma attack coming on. So I leaned up to her, and I said some words that shook her and allowed me to close the door.
All right.
Oh, my.
So I escaped.
Nice.
Good Lord.
Who has to deal with that at work?
Chucky.
Yeah.
Chucky. Thank you very much.
It was an Almani, too, so.
Thank you for the call, Sandra. We appreciate it. All right. That's a terrible, terrible story. Joel at Alhambra. Hi.
Hey, what's up, party people?
Man, this job seems rough. Well, you were a costume character where?
So I was in high school. I was a costume character at SeaWorld. Okay. And actually, I really enjoyed it for that summer and a year and a half there, except for one incident. SeaWorld has a bar. And, of course, as you're seeing, there's a theme of drunkenness going around. So I'm here with the kids. I'm Pete the Penguin. I'm having fun. And I see this guy and a whole group of people coming through, and he's just drunk. He's stammering. So he pushes a couple kids, and he grabs me. And, you know, the costume has a big old helmet on its head. And what ends up happening, the helmet goes all the way around, and it crushes my nose.
Oh,
so
no.
I start bleeding. And I wasn't really behaving. So he walks away. I turn around. I'm here. I am as Pete the Penguin. I kind of hobble all the way to him. I grab him and I bring him close to my helmet and I say, "Hey, what the F, dude? Like, there's kids here. That's just not cool." So my escort had to get me, and he's like, "Hey, what's going on? What's going on? We got to go back. So we have to go back to our thing. He filed a complaint a week later. My boss turns me into the office and goes, "Hey, okay, so you have two choices. Either you quit or we fire you."
Wow.
Pete the Penguin.
Yeah. Wow, that's
Pete
bogus.
The Penguin, you know? But that was such a cool job. I mean, we're only outside for 30 minutes. You get a 45-minute break. It was really cool, but, you know, not when people hit your helmet.
Yeah, that does seem like maybe that's a negative that you don't want to endure. All right, thank you for the call. We appreciate that. Let's go to Richard from Irvine. Hi, Richard.
Hey. Hey, how's it going, party people?
Good, thank you. Thanks for listening and holding on. Where did you work?
I worked at Toys R Us, actually, down to Bunk Toys R Us. And I've been Jeffrey M. Peavy, his sister, at multiple locations when I was in my early 20s. And unlike most people, I got beat up. I got, like, poked and pushed against, but I never had any kind of problem.
Having trouble understanding you.
Yeah, your phone's a little... Oh, that's better. Now?
That is better, yeah.
All right, sorry. Yeah, so I've been in my early 20s,
okay.
Doing that, and sorry,
it's okay.
My early 20s, I was doing that, and I never had any of those problems.
All right, never had any of the problems.
Phone, yeah,
sorry, Richard,
your phone's a little jacked. Sorry.
He just loved looking at the hot moms. He said basically that was what worked for him. Let's go to Kim in Pasadena. Hi, Kim.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So I worked at a popular amusement park.
Mm-hmm.
I'll leave it there.
Good enough.
And there were many stories, but the one I chose to share was when I just had enough. You get kicked, you get punched and hit and spat on and pinched every day. And I just had enough. And this one high schooler decked me across the head.
Mm.
And I saw the fist come down, so I grabbed it and I hollered, "I've had it."
Oh.
My manager got involved and security came and carted the kid off, and the parent was there and the dad was there. And so my manager said, "Don't press charges. The DA is going to drop it. The DA is not going to do anything. Just go for the apology." And so I said, "Okay, fine. Let's see if he apologizes." So he was in security with his dad and he was denying it when I walked in behind him. And he goes, "I didn't do anything. I didn't do anything. I didn't hit anybody." And then he turned around and they said, "Well, this is the employee that says you hit them." And he goes, "I didn't. Oh, my God. I hit a girl."
Oh, dear.
Oh, wow.
And the dad just looked at me. He's like, "You're so dead." He got in trouble.
Oh, my God. That is not a job that I feel like I would ever be able to do.
Mm-mm.
God bless you, Kim.
I don't do it anymore.
That's good. IKEA has gone crazy. I don't know if you... If you guys have ever worked at a place where you try to come up with ideas and then everybody has to go agree on something. Mm-hmm. And then, well, they had meetings and they decided they need a new way to encourage people to come to IKEA.
Okay.
So they need a special and they're going to do it for cribs. to buy a crib for your baby.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They put ads in magazines, and it's only in Sweden so far. Well, I'll let the news story tell you exactly how it works.
A new ad campaign that some people are calling funny and genius. Others find it outright gross.
Gross. The ad is for a crib for a newborn, but it's also an actual pregnancy test. At the top of the ad, it says, peeing on this ad may change your life.
All right, so...
So a built-in pregnancy test in a magazine ad.
Yes. So you tear
I don't
out,
think that's gross at all.
You tear out the page, and then you pee on it.
Okay.
And then...
And they weren't kidding. If you drop some urine on the directed spot on the ad, it will tell you if you're pregnant. The good news, if you are, the ad reveals a discount on the crib. The ad is currently running in a popular women's magazine in Sweden. Weird, right?
Don't bring that magazine to the States.
No, please don't.
Right.
They're really grossed out by pregnancy tests.
Well, here's my question.
At first, we thought you had to take the ad in and show them the positive result.
Obviously. How else would you get the discount?
Well, I think it reveals a code that then you can take in.
Huh.
But only if it's pregnant pee. So if you're not pregnant and you pee on it, supposedly you don't get the code. But
you don't get the code.
Then again, why would you want the crib if you're not pregnant?
I think you know why. Little role play with the hubby.
I'm stunned. That's an odd... I am stunned that this is affordable enough to be able to put this in thousands and thousands of magazines. A pregnancy test can't be inexpensive to make, can it?
I don't know how much they cost.
Allie, you would know. Sure. You probably bought a lot of them. How many?
Oh,
how much
I buy
they
them
cost?
In bulk, so it's cheaper.
She goes to Costco.
Like, yeah,
got 144 at a time. But I mean, if it has to cost a couple of bucks, I would imagine the technology that would be able to let you know whether you're pregnant based on the hormones in your urine. I can't imagine that it would be cost effective, except for all this free publicity they're getting from doing it.
All around the globe.
All around the globe. Yeah, that makes sense too, I guess.
Yeah, it's odd. And then I think what they should do, and they haven't come up with this yet because they don't have the genius that's inside of here.
As he points to his enormous noggin.
But if you pee on an employee, they have to put it together for you.
Oh, my God.
Wouldn't that be awesome? Because IKEA is horrible to put together. Have you ever tried?
Of course.
You go, I could master this. I could do anything.
And they give you that janky little wrench
stupid
thing.
Little janky
I don't
wrench.
Even know what that is.
Oh, it's so frustrating. And 15 minutes in, you go, all right, this is frustrating, but it's not going to beat me.
And it's very weird because everyone in Sweden speaks perfect English, yet the directions that they include in the IKEA furniture always look like they were translated into three or four different languages before they ended up being done into English.
Yeah, and if you follow the directions, they don't make sense. And you look at the drawings that they don't make. It's just not possible.
And you always have screws left over.
Yes.
You're like, I don't know where they should have gone.
I don't know. 4 or 5 months ago, I got something from IKEA, and I spent about 2 hours on it and then literally just picked everything up and threw it in the trash.
Oh.
I was just so frustrated.
Did you pee on it first?
I did not pee on it first, no. Jimmy Kimmel covered this story.
You're not seeing things. If you're pregnant, you pee on the ad. And they'll give you a deal on a crib, which... If you're pregnant, which if you're not pregnant, why would you even buy a crib, you weirdo? It's only available in Sweden, but it's getting a lot of attention. So a store here in Los Angeles now is jumping on the bandwagon with a sale that isn't limited to women or cribs.
IKEA wants you to pee on an ad and get a discount on a crib? I say IKEA, shmikea. Come on down to Murray's Home Furniture Warehouse, where you can pee on any piece of furniture in the store and get it for 20% off. Any piece of furniture. Pee on a sofa, 20% off. Pee on a rug, 20% off. Lazy boys, throw pillows, bunk beds, Sealy, Posture, pee on all of them, 20% off. But don't take my word for it. Ask one of our satisfied customers.
So I came in and peed on an ottoman. Got 20% off.
It's as easy as 1-2-P. Come on down to Murray's Home Furniture Warehouse, where our prices are guaranteed lowest on your purchases. P!
This offer is illegal.
See, because...
Oh, man.
I need somebody to pee on me. Does anybody have to pee?
Stryker, you've never been involved in a Does Kevin Know, have you?
No.
The peeps like to make fun of me because sometimes I have information in my head that I can't access.
Okay.
sometimes. You know that, you know that the arcade game where there's little teddy bears and you got the claw that comes down?
Yes.
And you try, that's what facts are like with me. And the claw sometimes is broken and it doesn't work.
Right.
So what's going to happen is they're going to ask me questions that I absolutely should know.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then they're going to ask if I do know. Mm-hmm. And most of the time I believe the answer will be no.
And a lot of the times it's stuff that we had literally discussed that week.
Okay.
And does Kevin know?
All right.
Does Kevin know? Does Kevin know? Well, there seems to be some doubt. Does Kevin know? Does Kevin know? I think it's time we all found out. Well, we know he has some knowledge, but it might be pretty small. He thinks he went to college, but he really can't recall. Does Kevin know? Does Kevin know? I think it's time we all found out.
Here's the thing, Kevin. We could ask you new stories. We could do whatever. But you'll notice everyone in this room.
Why is everyone in this room in here?
We have got Stryker. We have got assistant producer Christine, Dave, the King of Mexico, Omar, Chip.
Here?
Because we're your coworkers.
Right.
You should know basic facts about us. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So here's what's going to happen.
This is going to be worse than the show.
We're going to have you listen to something else. I'm going to ask my coworkers, is Kevin going to know the answer to this question?
Okay.
We're going to bet on it. Then you take off your headphones. I'll ask you the question, and we'll see if Kevin knows.
Okay.
I love this. It's like a game show where they step off with the headphones.
Right.
Like a Family Feud when the person is backstage and they can't hear the question.
He is not as much sequestered as that.
Right?
However.
I can't hear. I take off my headphones and I plug my ears.
Can you read lips?
I won't be looking.
Okay, good.
Yeah. All right.
And no.
Okay.
All right.
Here we go.
Are you ready?
I'm ready. All right, Kevin. Over there, he can't hear us.
Okay.
Simple. I talk about it all the time. What college did I attend?
It starts with I know which one.
No,
don't say it. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Will Kevin know it?
Will Kevin know?
I think he will know this.
Do you?
You said it 2 days ago with authority.
Yes. Omar thinks
he'll know it. Yeah,
he will.
I think so. I think so. He'll know that.
I think he might get the city,
mm-hmm.
but not the second part.
Agreed.
Same. Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
I'm going to bet $2.
No,
that
you're will. You're done. You're
okay.
done betting. Kevin.
You're done betting already?
Yes. So far, Stryker and Omar believe in you.
Okay.
The rest of us don't.
You two are not very smart. Let's see.
What college did I attend?
Well, it's either Boston College or Boston U, BU.
Mm-hmm. Is it?
Boston College.
Boom!
Yeah! Kevin! Wow! Yes. Kevin, we knew you'd get the Boston.
Right.
Wasn't sure if you'd get the second part.
Got it.
Well done, Kevin. All right.
Good job.
I'm sorry, who ruled against me here? Was it Allie and Dave and Christine?
Chip. All right. Next question.
He is gone.
What is Stryker's middle name? We just talked about this on Monday.
All right. Okay, Dave, what are you saying?
Quick answer.
Oh, yes. Yes.
You will know?
No.
There's no way.
Not even a chance.
Oh, nope.
Totally.
Nope.
Oh yeah. You believe in him.
He totally knows.
Good Lord. Chip. All right. Kevin's coming back.
All I heard was stupid Chip going, nope.
Yeah.
That's the only word I heard.
Here's the thing. Only Omar believes in you for this
All right.
One.
Thanks, O.
Uh-huh.
You're welcome.
What is Stryker's middle name?
Ramon.
Boom!
Oh my God!
Who is this guy?
Whoa!
Who is he?
It's like he listens.
Oh. All right. In that particular case,
right.
Ramon, I find funny. That's a funny middle name.
That's a weird name, right? Yeah.
All right.
I'm sorry. Who voted against me? Everybody but Omar.
Except Omar.
Right.
Thank you,
back.
Omar.
All right. Next one. What is the name of Beer Mug's child?
Ooh.
Oh, nope.
100% yes.
I think yes.
I think yes as
100%.
Well.
Oh, God. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He'll know.
Yeah.
I'm
going to say no.
Really? Okay.
Chip, what about Chip?
She said it at the beginning.
Okay. All right. So far, I'm two for two, by the way.
Yeah, you're good.
Kevin, what is the name of Beer Mug's child?
Evie.
Oh. Yeah.
See?
Wow. I got it.
You got it.
These two a-holes said
Kevin,
no.
I think you...
You think
you
I was
proving me wrong, and I don't like it.
How about yeah. that? See, this was Dave's idea, wasn't it? This was Dave's idea, wasn't it?
No.
It was 100% his idea.
How about that?
All right, next one.
Suck it.
Go away. What two bands does Chip have tattoos of? What two bands?
Oh, my. I
think he'll get one.
I think he'll get both, because one is one of his favorite bands. Another is one of his favorite people.
I'm with Chip. He'll get one band.
He'll get one. That's
really?
It. Yeah.
He gets both.
Both, definitely.
I'm saying both.
All right. Come on back, Kevin.
All right.
What two bands does Chip have tattoos of? What are the two bands?
Oh, Foo Fighters and Offspring.
Oh, oh yeah. Yeah.
Impressive.
How many people?
Yeah, I said you would.
Everybody. Wow.
Yeah.
You thought I'd only get one.
Yeah, I got one, too.
Unbelievable.
I mean, come on, people. You should stop doubting me.
All right.
Mine's like a steel trap, people.
Go away. Will Kevin know what the name is of Dave's dog?
Yes, because he hates it.
He'll know the first name, not the second name.
100%.
I think he'll know it.
I say yes.
Okay. All right, Kevin, come on back.
That was quick.
What is the name of Dave's dog? Oh, my God.
Look at that stare.
Really?
Dave's dog. An Instagram account.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it has an Instagram account.
Work it out. Work it out. Rhonda Ruffy.
Oh, yes! Yes!
Boom! Yeah.
Who is this man?
Killing the game.
Suck it!
Killing the game! All right, go away.
We have more!
Two more!
Can we stop now?
Two more! What is the name of Omar's wife? What is the name of Omar's wife? 100%.
Yes.
We all think you're going to get this.
This is where I always fail.
What is the name of Omar's wife?
Kazzy.
All right.
Yeah, I know her well.
What if he did it?
That's easy.
All right, go away.
Yeah, because we've had...
Yeah, go away. Last one. If he doesn't know this, I mean, what's wrong with him? What was assistant producer Christine's previous job at K-Rock?
Wait, it's the...
No.
Okay.
I think he'll guess wrong because she's had more than one previous...
No.
This is not a goddamn trick question.
Yeah.
I'm going to say yes.
I think he kind of will know, but will not know what it was called.
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
I think he'll say another one. I don't think he'll know it. He'll say another.
All right, let's do it. Let's go, Kevin.
All right.
He's not going to get it.
Kevin. What was producer Christine's previous job at K-Rock?
She was the assistant to the program director.
Boom!
Oh,
yeah!
Oh my God!
I mean, she did that for 15 years.
For 15 yards.
She did it for 15 years.
She shut down. Here's the thing. Kevin may not know about things we talk about that are in the news, huge, huge topics that could help him out in life, but he does know about his coworkers, and I find that delightful.
Although all of you said I wouldn't.
A lot of us did at different times.
Does Kevin know?
Well, I think we all found out.
Keep listening to K-Rock all this week and in the next 30 minutes for your chance to win a pair of tickets to see that band Incubus at The Joint at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas March 30th. Plus, you get a one-night stay at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino, and you get round-trip transportation on the K-Rock Incubus. See? It's a Incubus.
I don't get it.
Okay. I bet there was some high-fiving going on when I came up with that.
Woohoo! Let's do it! So that's coming up in the next 30 minutes here on the Kevin and Bean Show.
But the truth is, that's a great venue and a great band to see in that venue.
Agreed.
In a fun city. So it's a it's a pretty cool prize that you are minutes away from winning here on the Kevin and Bean Show on K-Rock. I may have to move to London, you guys.
Okay.
I've been thinking about it for a long time, but now I'm convinced that I cannot miss an episode of the ITV morning show with Holly Willoughby and Philip Schofield because they appear to only have freaks on. The last time we spotlighted these interviewers is when they were interviewing the lady who has sex with all the ghosts. This morning they have a male model on who has removed 4 ribs from his body.
Love it.
So that's the kind of interviews they do on the show, and that's why we weren't surprised to see her interview this lady, Nurul Majiban Hassan, who prefers to be known as Fractal Tetris Hurricane. Well, she is – it's a lot of weird words,
yeah.
I know.
What does she prefer to be called?
She prefers to be called Fractal. She wants her first name to be Fractal, middle name Tetris, last name Hurricane.
Okay.
Don't know where she came up with all of that, but all the Tetris part I can explain because she is in love with her Tetris. She only has intimate relationships with objects, not with men. And it's been that way since she was a little girl. ITV interviewers asked how it all began for her.
Objects came into your life when you were about the age of 7. And you say that you never got butterflies around boys, but you did around objects. So can you remember how it started?
It started when I was 7 and I just decided that I like monorails and iPods and treadmills.
Okay, so what? Monorails, okay. iPods, and treadmills.
In a romantic way?
Were some of the things that she developed crushes on when she was still in single digits.
Okay.
So again, her whole life, they said other people were, you know, crushing on boys, not you, right? Not her.
And the car GPS, that was another one later on that you found out.
That was when I was 10, yes.
Yeah, a little bit later, yeah.
I'm glad
that
she
would talk to her.
Yeah, right? Give her some direction in life, something.
I'm glad she waited until she was 10 to fall in love with a car GPS, because any younger than that is inappropriate.
Agreed, Bean.
All right, so let's talk about her previous boyfriend, the calculator named Pierre. and how she fell in love with Pierre, and what went wrong?
Well, I thought that Pierre is really beautiful, and I love the buttons on him, and the trackpad is beautiful.
I mean, not just the buttons, you guys, but the trackpad.
Sure.
Okay. Pierre had everything,
yeah. Right?
And I just loved his function.
We should point out that Pierre, sadly, broke, and so you went on to other attractions, Braxton the oscilloscope.
What?
They are straight up acting like this is a normal conversation to have.
I love that.
Sadly, we have to report that Pierre broke.
She wore Pierre out.
Oh, no.
And by the way, if you're in love with Pierre, mm-hmm. do you just abandon him because he's not as functional? I mean, that was, he broke a leg. I can't date him anymore. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of cruel and rude, I think.
Yeah.
What's Pierre supposed to do now?
Yeah, now Pierre's all alone. By the way, let's not lose sight of the fact that she dated an oscilloscope that she named Braxton. That was part of her life, okay?
She's leaving a trail of just broken items, man.
She is. I in no way mean to slut shame because, you know, whatever turns you on, but she is working through the electronics in her home, man. There's almost nothing she hadn't climbed on top of. All right, so we're getting to Tetris, her current love.
And then in 2016, this relationship you currently have, which is the Tetris cartridge, not the Game Boy that it goes into, but it is the cartridge itself,
yes,
isn't it?
Well, that's kind of incorrect. I'm in love with the game himself, and the cartridge is a means, a vessel of presenting him.
So why that in particular? What is it about Tetris that you love?
Love's not something you can explain, but it's
not something you can explain, you guys.
I mean, she's right.
How do you explain love? Right? The heart is complicated. The heart wants what it wants, and it wants Tetris.
You know what? Show me the lie, Fractal.
I'm sorry, say again,
I said, show me the lie, Fractal.
Exactly.
Honestly, part of it is that I can, you know, it's the clearing lines. It satisfies me.
What does she say there? Let me play it again.
I can, you know, it's the clearing lines. It satisfies me. And
anyone?
Clearing lines?
Clearing the lines, it satisfies me?
What does that even mean?
Clearing the lines.
Maybe as you're playing, you cleared the little
Maybe is that what it is? She's referring to something that you do in the game. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, it's the clearing lines, it satisfies me, and he's just really beautiful.
It's a feeling.
I find him just so attractive.
And this is not to put, delicately, but this is a personal, intimate relationship as well.
Yes, it's very intimate.
No follow-up questions on that, by the way.
Right?
How does that work with the Tetris cartridge?
Allie was saying, don't ask that question.
Don't do it, Philip.
That's where you do your deep dive right there.
How dare you?
You have to get some details.
Allie is right that they are treating her like she's not mentally insane.
Yeah.
All right, so the interviewers are asking her, how does this, the logistics of this relationship, how did they work? If you were dating a young man, you would take him out, you guys would have dates, you would go out with friends, you would take him home to your family, you would spend time together. What's it like for you and Tetris together with your private time?
My usual dates with him is just me sitting in the library playing him for hours on end. And sometimes I'll just be playing him on the Game Boy. I'll play him in general.
In the library? She doesn't even have him at home? Well, no follow-up on that either,
it's
by the way.
It's a date. Bean, you don't want to, you want to take your significant other out.
Yeah, show him off.
I see. So she's got him at home, and then when it's like Friday night and she's got the time.
She gets all dressed up and takes him to the library?
Right.
Okay.
And does it matter that other people have Game Boys and other people play Tetris? Do you ever get jealous
not
of them?
Not at all.
By the way, that's a great question.
Yeah, it's an open relationship.
Right.
So this is just a personal thing for you with that one in particular, is it?
No, I'm in love with the game in, as a whole, but I don't care if other people play him. As long as nobody else is trying to date him romantically or is in a more intimate relationship with him in a way.
So, Allie, if you start dating Tetris...
She's pretty safe there.
Yeah. If you start dating Tetris, though, it sounds to me like it's on.
Yeah, obviously.
You just made yourself an enemy, it sounds like.
Listen, I'm still into Pierre. I feel like she left him at a very hard time, and I want to build him back up.
Can you see a time in your life when... And as a friend of mine used to say, every pot has a lid, you know, everybody has the things that they love, that there is...
All right, now this is the last question we'll hear from this interview from the ITV.
I'm guessing he's going to try and get to what about people?
He is, but okay. He is bending over backwards in this question to make sure that his guest does not feel at all isolated or made fun of. He's basically saying everything's cool, like whatever you're into, all right? We're happy for you.
No accounting for our massive sexual spectrum that we have. Everybody's different. There is room for everybody. You are not hurting anybody. You are getting a great deal of enjoyment from this.
I mean, he is really going for it, isn't it?
Pierre's hurt.
Pierre is.
Right? What about Pierre?
He refuses to say that she's a nut job, though. He's treating her like she's not ill, is what's concerning
to me. She is not ill. I'm with him.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you think that there would be a moment where human contact would be important to you?
In the sense that human contact, I'm fine with just having friendships, like human friendships, close friendships. I'm not really interested in romantic relationships. Mm. I've tried romantic relationships with humans, and they never worked out.
They never worked out. Fractal, I have news for you, my dear. It's not them. It's just a couple of hours away from t-shirts going on sale. The latest Kevin and Bean limited edition t-shirt at 10 a.m. this morning, just in time for summer, with the Kevin and Bean billboard picture on the front. Only $19.99 plus tax, proceeds to charity, and you can buy it for 24 hours only, starting at 10 a.m. KROQ.com for all the details. Hey, Dr. Judy Ho.
Hi, how are you, Bean?
Big fan of yours. So grateful that you made some time to come in and see us here on the Kevin and Bean Show today.
I'm so glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
You are a licensed clinical and forensic psychologist, which sounds like you must be incredibly smart.
Well, I don't know about that, but I went to a lot of school.
Yes, indeed. Boy, do we need you, Doctor. Boy, do we need you. We have been hit so hard here at KROQ over the last year or so with everybody from Chester Bennington to Chris Cornell to Avicii. Just in the last couple of weeks, obviously, we've seen the Anthony Bourdain and the Kate Spade suicides. And I saw Christiana Amparo on CNN last night, who was saying that it's an epidemic. Suicide has become an epidemic around the world right now. Is that an exaggeration?
No, it's not an exaggeration at all, because suicide has gone up 30% in the last couple of decades. And that's a huge deal. And before, we were thinking, you know, okay, maybe this is just among maybe a subsection of the population. We were talking about teenagers, that they had suicide on the rise. But now these new statistics actually show it's across the board, no matter what your age range is, no matter what your background is, it's hitting everybody. And I really do think that there is a true increase, and that perhaps there's a number of different things that have changed about our culture that are making it seem like it's an easier way out, which is really sad. Like, maybe this is the fix, the quick fix to all of their problems.
Yeah, we're an instant gratification society. Maybe that's the rationale now.
Right. And I don't think that it helps when we see how people are treated post-mortem. When we look at sort of exactly, you know, when we're talking about these celebrities and how much they are revered, especially right after they commit suicide, I don't think that helps, especially the more young and impressionable minds.
Oh, like, that's interesting.
You know?
And there is a thing called suicide contagion, correct?
Yes.
And that's real.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's why it's so nice that I see the media trying to shift the way that they cover these stories.
Yes.
Before, they would go into so much detail about how the person actually killed themselves.
Right.
I remember when Robin Williams' suicide was covered, it was a lot of detail about how he hung himself, right? They even made visuals sometimes.
Oh, they
right?
reenacted.
Animations.
Yes.
It was horrible.
Yeah.
I'm so glad that that's de-emphasized because that's part of what really contributes to that suicide contagion.
Right. I do feel like one of the first things that starts to be said after the shock of reporting the news, like in Anthony Bourdain's case just last week, is they almost immediately now go to people talking about how they either were aware of his struggles in the past or they weren't. And I think there's so much more awareness now that everybody is walking around with something going on inside their heads, and you really have to be careful and perceptive to get a hint that there's a problem, right?
Absolutely. And I think that that is sometimes what loved ones struggle with the most. You know, could I have done something to stop this? Could I have seen the signs? And I don't think people should blame themselves because not everybody displays their mental illness or their depression in the same way. I mean, we certainly can talk about common signs, but at the same time, unfortunately, when somebody is in that sort of very bleak state, they've mostly isolated themselves from the people that really know them the best.
Right.
And I think with Anthony Bourdain especially, you know, he is somebody who travels the world. In some ways, people look at him, they think that's a great life. But it's also an easy way then to sort of hide from the people who probably know you the most and could maybe see those signs of deterioration.
I think that's a really important thing to bring up, because when somebody takes their life, immediately people want to give out the suicide hotline.
Yes.
And they say, you know, just reach out. If you're feeling this way, reach out. But 9 times out of 10, if you are in that state of depression, the last thing you're doing is reaching out. So maybe this conversation needs to shift to, we need to start reaching out more. We need to start reaching out to our friends that we know are depressed, even our friends that are the happiest. There needs to be more human connection across the board.
I totally agree with that, Allie, because I think when you put a suicide hotline out there, it's only going to help the people who are actually going to call the number.
And you're putting the onus on them.
Right. And when you're depressed, you're not going to be the person to usually reach out. People have to come to you.
Right.
And I think there's a really difficult dynamic with that, because people who are depressed, they do push people away. And it's part of the illness for a lot of them. They just want to be alone, right? Because they're depressed. They don't want to talk about it. They're ashamed. And so sometimes loved ones do go away, you know, because once you've been pushed away too many times, love people, they'll say, you know what, forget you. Like, I will go away and I'm going to do my own thing. And I think that dynamic really does contribute to them sort of spiraling by themselves and kind of being left alone with their own thoughts.
This is the voice of Dr. Judy Ho here on the Kevin and Bean Show, licensed clinical and forensic psychologist. We're talking about the epidemic of suicides in America. Is it the case around the world as well, doctor, or is this a more uniquely American thing that's happening?
Well, you know, the research is really right now more U.S.-centric. I think they're starting to do more research, collecting statistics, but I would say that it's hard to really get the data also, especially if it's a country that isn't even really well-versed yet even in talking about mental illness. So for us, we still talk about the stigma that's widespread in the U.S., but we're a lot ahead of a lot of other countries.
Yeah.
Other countries don't even talk about it, so they don't even have good prevalence rates for mental illness struggles. So I would assume that is probably happening also worldwide, but we just don't know the statistics yet.
There are still people that I see on social media, and I'm sure you do as well, who look at some of these names that we've mentioned, like Avicii is a perfect example. Young, handsome, incredibly wealthy, incredibly popular, and they just can't understand how somebody who, from the outside, appears to have everything in the world to live for would make that ultimate decision. How do you explain that to people who just get, they have a disconnect between what they think that person's life is and what their real life is?
Absolutely. I know that it looks perplexing, but I think the important thing to understand is that depression is really about your perception of your life, right? So other people can look at your life and they say, wow, your life is amazing. Well, the person who is depressed, it's about their mindset and it's about the way they think. And so if they have thoughts about their life that it's really not as good as it should be, it could be better, is it ever going to get better? Especially the sense of hopelessness. That's really kind of what we're talking about. It's really their view of what life is. And so, unfortunately, with depression, their thought process is usually the glass is half empty. And also that the world is never going to change. So if you're dissatisfied about something that's going on in their life,
they don't think it's going to get better.
And the thing that a lot of people, and I think it is getting so much better now, the stigma is getting broken down little by little, not fast enough, in my opinion, but people are still under the guise of, well, buck up, it gets better. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps. It is chemical. It is not something that just goes away. This is a medical issue. This is a disease. And I don't understand people that can't wrap their head around that.
I know. And I think it's really difficult because people look at mental illness, and because it's sort of hidden, it's unknown, it's easier for people to attribute that it's maybe a matter of willpower.
Right.
Just buck up. Like you said, Allie, you know, just clean yourself up. What's the problem? Well, you know what? It is a medical illness just like any other physical illness. And we don't have that kind of stigma for cancer, for diabetes. So why do we have the stigma for something that is so important, the most important organ of your body, in my opinion, it's your brain. It's the disease of the brain.
Second most important, in my opinion.
Oh, Dean. Good Lord.
Dr. Judy Ho is here. Allie, we want to take some phone calls, right? What do you? What are we looking for here? If we can get some calls in for Dr. Ho.
Well, I know a lot of people that have had loved ones that have taken their own life, and they don't know how to deal with it. One of my best friends killed himself. And I went through everything from the anger to the, oh my, what are you doing, to kind of coming to terms with why he did it and embracing it. And I think people just need to know, A, how to reach out to somebody. How do we do that lightly? How do we do it maybe even stronger? How do you deal with it if it has happened to someone you love? Maybe people that just want to talk and get some feelings out and see how they should be treating their mental illness as well.
Okay. All right. So calls on this topic right now for Dr. Judy Ho, 1-800-520-1067. And maybe this is something someone will ask, because I'm curious too, is how do you know that you have depression rather than just normal run of life sadness? Because things are not always going to be great for you all the time, and sometimes it's dangerous and sometimes it's normal. So how do you tell the difference there? Maybe that's something we can get into as well. But your calls on this topic, I know it's kind of a zag for the Kevin and Bean Show, but it's very, very important, because we're losing too many fine people to suicide, and we don't want you to be one of them. Give us a call, 1-800-520-106, and we'll take your calls next right after this on K-Rock. Our guest in studio here on the Kevin and Bean Show this morning is Dr. Judy Ho. She's a very smart lady, you guys, and she knows a lot about a lot of things having to do with mental illness, with suicidal thoughts. We're taking your calls at 1-800-520-1067. Coming up in about 20 minutes, by the way, Doctor, we're going to be taking calls on people who have walked in on their parents having sex. That's something you
could
never
get around for that conversation.
Oh my God, that's happened to me.
No.
Oh no.
Yes.
And you can never recover from that, right?
I have been traumatized forever. It happened maybe 30 years ago, and I'm still traumatized.
Yes. Yeah, you want to believe that your parents haven't done it since you were conceived. That's what we all hope to believe.
But yes. That's a mistake.
That's coming up in a few minutes here on the Kevin and Bean Show. Before we get to the calls for you at 1-800-520-1067, I have a text here. What's the best way for somebody to get help or treatment or medication without insurance or with minimal insurance? Now, that's a great question, because a lot of people face that dilemma. They know they need help, but they can't afford it.
That's a great question. You know, the secret is actually university-based clinics, because universities who have doctoral programs that are training psychologists, they have supervised clinics where these advanced doctoral students are going to be working with these individuals, and they do sliding fee to free, but they're getting amazing care. It's very scientific and evidence-based, and the clinical supervisors are watching them the whole time.
Oh, wow.
It's a really good way to actually get in the door.
Okay, that's a good tip. All right, let's get to some calls on the air here. 1-800-520-1067 for Dr. Ho. Let's go to line one, start first in Southgate, and say hi to Sandy, who's up on the Kevin and Bean Show. Hey, Sandy, thanks for calling. Thanks for holding on. You're on with Dr. Ho. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
Hi. I was calling because this year, I'm 39 years old, and this year I suffered a really bad case of depression that I've never experienced before. I feel like it was a combination of anxiety mixed with depersonalization, mixed with thoughts of suicide, and excuse me, but it was really bad.
Wow, so
I wanted to know if it has something to do with my age. I have suffered anxiety for the past few years. I feel like maybe no one really understood what I was going through.
Well, Sandy.
Well, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
Do you have a question?
I wanted to know if there was something that would probably come back, if they had anything to do with maybe early menopause, I don't know, or a hormone.
Yeah, what about menopause? I've had a couple of people bring that up this morning, doctor.
Yeah, definitely. You know, when women go through menopause or even when they're perimenopausal, sometimes they will have some chemical changes that do lead to mood swings and feeling down. So when that happens, you definitely need to talk to your doctor. They might refer you to a specialist. Sometimes it'll go away, but if it doesn't, it's okay. There's treatment and medication or therapy can really help with that. And with Sandy, you know, how long have you been struggling with sort of this worst bout of depression that you've had?
It really only lasted about 2 weeks, maybe, to be honest, maybe about a month. It was things I had never experienced before. I would explain it to people that I would try to talk to that it felt like being in a commercial for depression. I never really thought that would ever happen to me, and I didn't want to be on medication, so I researched supplements and all types of vitamins that I could take. But now I just that fear that it's going to happen again. And
let me stop you right there, Sandy, and ask, because you bring up a good point. There are people who just don't want to be on medication, right, doctor?
Yes.
That doesn't seem smart.
Yeah, you know, it's hard. You know, people, you know, there's all kinds of stigma also against medication for mental illness, right? And Sandy, I would say, you know, for whatever reason that you're not considering medication, you know, I would just maybe open your mind to it a little bit. But in the meantime, think about getting some treatment on the sort of social, psychosocial side. So cognitive behavioral therapy is the gold standard for depression when you don't want to take medication. It also is great and adjunctive with medication. So I would look into that. It's a really practical type of therapy where it teaches you coping skills to deal. And Sandy, 1 month is not so bad, but I think it's more the severity and the depth of your depression that concerns me, and the fact that you even had some suicidal thoughts. I can't tell you if it's going to come back, but I can tell you that you can cope with it. So if you go and get treatment and stop looking at supplements, because we don't really know what those do. There's no evidence for those. So go and find a cognitive behavioral therapist to start, and then start that medication discussion. But in the meantime, that cognitive behavioral therapy is really going to help you with coping skills so that if these feelings do come back, you know how to deal with them.
Sandy, we appreciate you, and we thank you for calling. And please get back in touch with us and let us know you're doing better down the road, I hope. All right? 1-800-520-1067. Let's go to Lindsay. She's on line 4 calling from Los Angeles. I think she has a question that is going to echo with a lot of our listeners. Lindsay, welcome to the Kevin and Bean Show, and you're on with Dr. Ho.
Hey, guys. Thanks. I am actually a spouse of somebody who suffers from severe depression. He's an emergency veterinarian, and he loves what he does, but the environment that which he works in is very toxic. And can be, obviously, all he sees is negativity, which is really, really hard. And so when it's really great, it's really great. And when it's really bad, it's very bad. So as a spouse and somebody who doesn't suffer from depression, it's like everything I do to help triggers something. So it's like I try to say, hey, you know, are you going to see your therapist? Are you taking the steps? And that only upsets him more. Which is totally understandable. But on my end, I'm like, okay, I really want to help. I see my husband in pain. That's my partner. You know, when he suffers, I suffer. And I'm not saying I suffer any worse. It's just I don't know the steps I need to take in order to keep myself healthy.
Doctor? It's real tough to feel like you're walking on eggshells because everything you say is upsetting to someone, right?
Absolutely. And Lindsay, we feel you, you know. I mean, just because you're not the one actually suffering from depression, you know, it's actually really hard to care for somebody with depression because they do push you away. We were just talking about that before the break. And so, you know, it's interesting because you're trying to sort of kind of keep him on his appointments, make sure he's doing what he's doing, but then he really feels judged by that. And I think the best thing that you can do as a loved one is just be there for them and ask them what they need from you. You know, I think every day it can be different with somebody who's really severely depressed. Some days they're feeling great. And then when you say, hey, did you see your therapist? Then that can trigger them. It's like, I'm feeling fine today. Why are you doing this to me? So I think you just have to take it day by day and just be there for him. I know it's hard to like stay in there, but just be there, sit next to him, ask him what he needs from you today. Every day can be a little different. You can, of course, encourage him to get help. That's important, but let him and his doctor handle it. So if he says, I am still in touch with my doctor, ask for permission to speak to that doctor. Ask for your husband to sign over a release that you can check in with a doctor directly about how he's doing. That's another good way to keep tabs on the person instead of having to, like, actually talk to them directly and make them feel triggered, if that makes sense.
Right.
Thank you for the call, Lindsay. We really appreciate it. We're going to squeeze in just one more. Allie, you wanted line six? Is that the one you
want? Yeah, we've talked a little bit about it, but how do we then approach people that are distancing themselves? I think that's Eric's question.
Yeah. Hi, Eric. Hi. So, you know, if you have a loved one who is distancing themselves from you, what have you done to try to bring them back? Is there anything that you've tried to sort of get re-engage them?
The first thing I always try to do is just try to start a conversation. Like, this person, she's always trying to push me away. She says she hates me. Actually, got to a point that she says she wants me dead because I'm trying to help her. So what I do is I just try to initiate a conversation, something we have common ground on.
Right.
Keep going from there, see what we can do.
Yeah, you know, it's really tough. Yeah, they really do push you away. And again, that's their illness, and it's hard to not feel, you know, sort of upset by that and want to go away.
Yeah, don't take it personally, right?
No, don't take it personally. But, you know, no texting. I really think, again, that real connection. Allie, we were just talking about this. You got to call them. You got to show up at their house. Let me take you out for coffee. Let's go out to dinner. Come on, let's get dressed. Let's clean up your room. I mean, just go and actually have community with them. Just check in on them every few days. And if they say, go away, okay, well, but I brought you some coffee. Let me sit with you for 20 minutes, and then I'll go. Right? But you can keep it time limited, but I think that real connection is very important.
Absolutely.
Eric, good luck to you, my friend. Thank you for calling. Oh, man, I'm so sorry that we're out of time. This is such an important discussion, and I think, Doctor, if I understand you correctly, we've got a long way to go, but we are going in the right direction in this country with how we deal with and how we talk about mental illness and particularly suicide, right?
Absolutely. And I just want to thank you guys for having this conversation, because we need to talk about it to further destigmatize this whole thing. You know, it is the same as a physical illness. It's medical. Let's treat it as such, and let's stop this epidemic of suicide.
Amen. Those are very important words. Take that away from this conversation. All right. Hey, Doctor, before you go, you're going to be on a new CBS TV show in the fall?
I am. I'm going to be a co-host on a new show called Face the Truth. It's a daytime television show. It's conflict resolution. Our host is Vivica Fox, and it's going to be really interesting. It's going to be a really fun project.
Well, when we get it up and on the air, please come back and see us, okay?
I will. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Doc.
This is DJ Omar Khan radio that you're about to hear.
Do you have anything else that you're weighing? Maybe I have something else that I could use.
No, these are the stories.
Okay.
This is the thing for today.
Okay.
I think one story you'll be pleased with. The other will just, if it affects you the same way it affects me, you'll just be confused by it.
All right.
This one, story number one is in East Granby. Police credit a motion-activated camera with helping them capture a suspect in three cases of feces being found in the middle of a cul-de-sac. Yes, this is a serial pooper who has been caught and identified, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh,
all right.
A warrant was issued, and Holly Malone, 43, who thought it would be a lady.
Not me.
Zero people.
Holly Malone, 43, of Simsbury, was taken into custody after an unrelated traffic stop connected her to the vehicle in the video. She was charged with a breach of peace and creating hazardous conditions. I was wondering what they charge you with. I mean, I was wondering, is it just littering? I mean, what? Apparently it's creating hazardous conditions.
But was it in the street? Maybe that's
why? In the middle of a cul-de-sac.
Yeah, so maybe if cars were trying to avoid it, they would consider that. I don't know.
Or maybe it's just the toxic nature of it.
Sure.
I don't know. I don't know how they would classify that. She was released on bond, is scheduled to be arraigned on March 1st. By the way, how's that conversation go with her friends and family? Yeah, I got to go to court. Oh, really? What for, Holly? Well.
Right. And then she says it, and then their friends go, again?
Police said her reason was that she could not make it to her destination or to the bathroom. There were three separate incidents of serial pooping found in the roadway at Kirkstone Drive on November 7th and November 16th. So then they put up a motion-activated camera that was installed, and on December 5th, it recorded the suspect's vehicle and another poop incident. Police described the street as being undeveloped. So that's interesting. I just noticed that. I wonder if that means she kind of drove out of her way to look for a place where it was likely she could get out of her car and not be seen by residents, perhaps.
That makes sense.
Anyway, she was identified and admitted her involvement with the incident. She told them that she is ready, Allie? Yep. Lactose intolerant.
Oh, sweet spirit.
And sometimes is, quote, stupid and doesn't avoid dairy.
Yeah, I get everything about this woman.
She said she apologized for her actions.
Yeah. You do, except for her
cul-de-sac pooping.
Uh-huh. Sure, except for that.
So sometimes you just go, look, I know this is going to wreak havoc on my system, but I really, really feel like a pizza.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to have a pizza. I'm just going to deal with the consequences.
Worth it.
And is there any health detriment to that experience? I mean, it's unpleasant, but does it hurt you at all?
I mean, I can't imagine your body being put through something like that that you're allergic to. It can't be good. Over time,
I mean,
if you keep doing it.
A positive.
It's not ideal.
But it's not the type of thing, if you did repeatedly, that would land you in the hospital or make you like super sick, or it's not dangerous, right?
It might be.
It might be.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. See, I don't know anything about lactose intolerance. And is that something you're born with? It's your whole life, or do you develop it later in life?
I don't have that answer, but I don't believe that I could have my mother's breast milk.
Wow. So from the beginning.
So.
Deep
How's
dive
that?
On this
Good
one.
Good morning.
Deep dive. Hey. I'm fascinated.
I didn't latch on either. And
that explains a lot of commitment issues, doesn't it? And this one, part two of DJ Obercod's Poop Radio Tribute is I can't and I won't and I just help here. This is out of the UK, a suspected drug dealer on a record-breaking poop strike is now going into his 29th day without pooping. Short version of this story is he was arrested with drugs on him and was charged with the intent to supply Class A drugs, so he swallowed them.
Right.
And they said, well, we're going to have that evidence as soon as nature takes its course. This article suggests, no, it actually says outright he has been in jail for 29 days without pooping.
How is that humanly possible?
I don't know.
My question, Kevin, even better, is how is that humanly possible? How are they in their fifth week of the Essex police waiting for him? And can't you give somebody something that will make it beyond their control to poop?
How is that possible for humans?
Yes.
What I would ask, though, is how is that humanly possible?
That's a great question, Allie. Huh. It does seem like this would kill you. Like the toxins in your body after that amount of time, I feel like would kill you.
Guys, I don't think this is possible.
Really?
This article suggests, by the way, and again, this is part of my utter confusion with the piece, is that he is in control of what he's eating, and it sounds like his mom is bringing him food.
What?
So he is eating Frosty's cereal bar, he is eating fish, he's eating fruits and vegetables. Again, why isn't the jail regulating strongly what's going in so that they have better control out of what's going out? So there's only so long you can hang on, says a doctor from the Primary Care Society of Gastroenterology. You won't get a devastating buildup of toxins that can poison the body in such a short span of time. You're just going to get a lot of uncomfortable stretching of intestinal tubes. It's an acute situation, not chronic, but ultimately things will move through the bowel and it will empty itself.
But is he smart in that the drugs will also work themselves through his system?
That's a great question.
And then when he poops, he's clean.
In other words, if he just
I hate this.
If he just absorbs them into his system, he'll test positive for drugs, but there won't be whatever the bulk evidence was they were looking for to suggest that he was trying to sell it.
Exactly.
The Essex Police, by the way, on their social media has Poo Watch as a hashtag to keep us all updated about any sudden movements.
Do we have to follow that?
We don't.
Okay.
We don't. We can forget we ever heard this story and we can move on. But I had the 1-2 punch of those stories and I said it's too good to not bring them to you.
I pooped my pants.
Here's the opening paragraph of this article from Bustle.com. When it comes to infidelity, whether or not someone has cheated isn't always black and white. But now there's a new term floating around, micro-cheating. It might complicate matters even further. What is micro-cheating? It's a nifty new word used to describe all the little ways that someone might cheat on their partner without technically doing so. So you can cheat while not cheating, guys? That's what we're talking about? All right, here's the news from CBS New York.
It's the hot topic on the internet right now. Micro-cheating.
33 ways your boyfriend is micro-cheating and totally getting away with it. Micro-cheating is like the little white lie of cheating.
Micro-cheating refers to a small series of actions that don't quite meet the definition for cheating, So, for example, frequent confiding with somebody outside of the marriage.
The micro-cheater might rationalize this as just talking to a friend. But psychologist Barbara Greenberg says this is actually a very intimate act.
The difference between a friendship and micro-cheating is friendships are usually not kept secret.
Okay, now that's the first thing that was said in this report that started to bring this into focus for me. Because if I have a conversation with a friend who happens to be a woman about anything and don't tell my wife about it, I don't think that's me cheating. That's me having a relationship with a friend, right?
Agree.
But I guess what the doc is saying is, as long as I'm not going out of my way to keep that conversation a secret, it's fine. Mm-hmm. But once all of a sudden it's special between me and this friend, now my wife's got a reason to be upset. Am I reading that correctly?
That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
And do we agree with that?
Yeah.
Okay, let's hear some more.
But when you're talking to somebody and keeping it secret, that starts to meet the definition of micro-cheating.
Other examples of micro-cheating, according to the experts, calling or texting a friend for information or advice on an issue that could easily be found online.
I mean, I do often text models and say, what is the population of North Dakota? You know, just because I thought they might know. Where do you suppose that one is coming from? Is it, in other words, is she suggesting that you make up excuses to have a conversation with somebody?
It sounds like that. Yeah. Like you could find the information quicker probably by just going someplace else.
Right. But the someplace else isn't hot, Kevin. Right? That's what you're not remembering. You're not keeping that in mind. All right. Let's find out what else is micro-cheating.
Giving an attractive waitress or waiter an excessively large tip.
Okay. Now, again, I break with the doctor here. If she's hot, she gets my money. I'm sorry.
No. What you mean to say, Bean, is if she's a great waitress, she gets your money.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, she's extremely competent in her very important and difficult job. Then I pay her more. Yeah, that's what I meant to say. All right, is that micro-cheating? If you throw a couple of extra bucks at an attractive server, male or female, because you, I don't know, is that considered some sort of flirting or something?
I don't see it unless you're going back every lunch requesting a sit in her area.
That seems like a reach.
That's a reach.
Yeah, I would think so too. But I guess the question the doctor might ask, kind of going back to the text conversation earlier, is would you put that extra money on the bill if you were sitting there with your girlfriend?
And the answer, of course, is yes.
that's what you like to say, right? All right, let's hear some more.
And neglecting to mention a significant other in a conversation so as to appear single on purpose.
Now, that's interesting. So you're having a conversation with somebody. You're at a party or something like that, and you talk about all these things that you did and all these places that you went, and you kind of don't mention that you did those things with your spouse maybe?
I've had guys do that, totally downplay that they're in a relationship, you're chatting at a bar or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I've watched guys put girls' numbers in phones, mm-hmm. not with her name, but like Steve, whatever. Let me get back to this later. Yeah, it's if you're downplaying your relationship in any way, shape, or form, it's probably not a good sign.
So is the way around that, if you're ever having a conversation with a member of the opposite sex that you don't know or don't know well, to like in that opening paragraph go, hey, my name is so-and-so and I'm married. I mean, is that what you're supposed to do, is like get everything out up top?
I think you're not supposed to do these micro-cheating things.
Yeah, there's a difference between being way too open about something like, hi, I'm Jim, I've been married for 8 years, or... Hi, I'm Jim. I love to go hiking. Do you go hiking? Oh, I go hiking all the time alone. Nope. No one tied to me. I'm just Jim, real free. There's a huge difference between those two things, Bean.
I feel like you've met Jim.
I've met so many Jims, and I'm convinced I'm so many Steves and phones.
If we have time, I think, to take some calls on this at 1-800-520-1067. I wonder if people have things that they have complained to their significant others about as something that they see as micro-cheating, but the other person is like, you're crazy. It's just me being friendly, or it's just me having a conversation. Because a lot of this stuff is not black and white.
Well, it's not black and white, and I feel like the point of micro-cheating isn't that it happens every now and then. I feel like it's a gradual erosion. This stuff is happening. You've had a conversation about it. Another one of them was you are totally keeping tabs of someone on their social media. Like, oh, look at what she just tweeted. Hey, did you see this picture? That
too much
over
of that.
time. time could be like, why are you so obsessed with this person's social media? So I don't think it's just every now and then. This is a gradual erosion.
And I wonder if the person who is doing that, the person who is following an ex or just following somebody that they kind of have a crush on or something that online, I wonder if in their mind they think, I'm just looking at public social media. I'm not even having any interaction with this person. So how can I possibly be doing anything wrong? And I'm sorry, I think that's a defensible position.
Well, of course, because you like gaslighting people, Bean. That's what you do.
No, but
you
what
make the lady feel like she's crazy while you're busy manipulating.
No, no, no. I'm just saying, hypothetically, what I'm saying is if somebody is just looking at a girl, in this case, a girl's social media, what is he really doing wrong?
Yeah, I don't. There's so many of these that I'm like, calm
down.
This
sounds questionable. Yeah, take it easy.
Yeah, if you're then sliding into the DMs like, hey, your hair looks great in that picture, then you're entering a different realm. But a lot of this stuff is maybe calm down a little bit.
Do you think? Okay, let's take one real quick before the break, and then we'll get to you everyone else who wants to call on this at 1-800-520-1067. Let's make it Deanna or Dina. I'm sorry, I don't know which. Whittier, line one, please.
Hey, Dina or Deanna.
Hi, my name's Deanna.
Okay, thank you.
Hi. I'm actually on the other side of this.
Oh.
I was the micro cheater.
Okay,
and I didn't
tell us
think
about
it was a big deal until I just...
We'll be the judge of that.
Okay, so what happened?
I was having a lot of, we just had a couple kids, back to back. So I was like really stressed out at home and I didn't want to talk to my spouse about it.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, I reached out to, an old friend who was
an old boyfriend.
No.
Okay.
Never a boyfriend.
Just checking.
Okay.
Never. It was completely platonic, but, it still hurt his feelings once he found out because I was keeping it a secret.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
You know, so it was a secret friendship because I wanted it for myself and my sanity. But
you needed somewhere to vent about your stressful life that involved your newborn kids and your husband.
Right.
Yes.
All right, Allie, how do you feel about that?
I completely get it because we need those things. But to keep it an active secret, because I think a part of you probably, whether you wanted to admit it or not, hearing it today made you go, oh, shoot, that was what I was doing. You knew something would make him mad.
Exactly.
Maybe you should pick a girl to complain to.
Well, that's not micro-cheating, though. It's she's turning to someone for an emotional support that she's not getting from him.
Right.
Right. And it, like, destroyed our relationship for a couple years.
Oh, no.
A couple years?
Yeah. How about now? Are things better?
It's better till an argument comes up.
Oh, and then this always comes
and
back.
Then it's on.
Yeah.
What about Chad? Remember Chad? Was that his name? I don't know.
Deanna,
Chad.
I hope we didn't come along at an inopportune time to have this conversation on the radio. I hope this isn't stirring
anything
up.
I just thought that I would put my side of it, and it does hurt people's feelings. And,
all right. Does fair enough, my dear. Good luck to you and your husband and your boyfriend. Thank you for the call. We appreciate it. All right. 1-800-520-1067. Natalie and Dave and Gabby and Tammy and all the rest. You hang on. We'll get to you right after this on K-Rock.
The Lumineers next. But first, let's talk to Tammy in Burbank. Hi there.
Hi.
Tammy, we're talking about micro-cheating here today. Has it happened in your life? It's not quite cheating. It's not quite as black and white as that. But sometimes partners get upset by things you do.
Yes, it has. It have actually happened recently. I met somebody through work, and he has been asking me to, you know, go out and hang out and everything. So I asked him if he was married, and he said he was. So at that point, I asked him, like, what do you think about, you know, having, because when I was married, we always made a pact where you don't have new friends. You have the friends that you've had throughout the years. And if you do have a new friend, then bring that person to dinner. So I asked.
Oh, so it's as a couple, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
So I asked him, "Is it okay if I meet your wife?" And then he said, "No."
Oh, damn.
At that point, I said, "Okay, then why?" He said, "That would be awkward. What if I met your ex-husband?" And I said, "That would be fine, but okay." So at that point, he's a really nice guy, and I love hanging out with him. He's like, he's super fun. But then at that point, I'm like, oh, I'm starting to kind of feel a little attracted to him, and that's why I wanted to meet his wife, because I wanted to know where he stood.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I know he obviously, I think he has a crush on me, because why wouldn't he let me meet his wife, correct? So
correct, yes, correct. I think you are absolutely reading this one right.
Okay.
Well, that's too bad because he's a really nice guy, and maybe I can still keep hanging out with him. But if I met his wife, then no. That wouldn't be right.
Hey, I feel like Tammy can be swayed.
Hey, get his wife to get into hiking or cruise ships, and just wait for your opening.
Jeez, Bean, Tammy's not a killer.
It wouldn't be her doing the killing. It's just that it happens anyway to anybody. All right, Tammy, glad you called. Thank you for listening. 1-800-520-1067. Your micro cheating thoughts and stories coming up after the Lumineers on K Rock. We're talking about micro-cheating now on the Kevin and Bean Show. It's not quite infidelity, but it is behavior that your partner maybe doesn't know about and certainly wouldn't approve of. Martha writes in from Whittier, 626. How about when a man invites a 20-year-old female jogger into his home to take a shower? Is that micro-cheating?
Well, I don't think so, because your wife was there.
Yeah, she was.
Right?
I had her. I mean, she was tied up in the basement, but technically she was home. Right. All right. Give me some Rob here in Whittier, line 6. I think he's going to shed some light on this with some good observations for all of us. Hey, Rob.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. Thank you.
First time caller. Anyway.
Thank you.
Getting to the point. So the whole micro-cheating thing, I think the thing we need to ask ourselves and be real about it is we all get hung up on the action, but really we've got to go back a step and look at the intent. Like, you know, if we use an example, you know, I jump on Facebook and, you know, a friend of mine, a female friend, goes on a trip to Rome and I want to look at photos of her Rome holiday, maybe to plan my own holiday, no big deal.
Right.
Friend of mine, jump on Facebook, I'm looking at her photos of her going to Rome because I'm sitting there thinking my wife's a nag and I picture what it would have been like if I'd married her instead. Micro-cheating, you know, same action, different intent. And I think
aren't we getting into what's going on in someone's brain and how much should they be punished for something that is just a fleeting thought that they're not acting on?
Well, yeah, it is. Well, it is. It's in our brain because that's where it all starts. You know, that's where it all begins. I'm sure that anyone who's, you know, like cheated or been, you know, dishonest with their spouse, it started probably with a thought or a gesture or a look or a wink or, you know, it does start with us. And that's the only thing that we can take accountability for is our own, you know, our own thoughts and our own actions. We've got to, like, I think, get on it at the root and not let it kind of manifest and,
I totally agree with Rob. I also think for some people, intent can change. So an intent of looking at someone's pictures can then be like, hey, did you have fun in Italy? And then realize, oh, this is a really fun person. It can gradually
erode. Hey, you
look great.
And you really look good in this picture in Italy.
Intent can change, but I still stand firm with, if you're going to cheat, you're going to cheat. So whether it starts off micro, then it goes to emotional, then it goes to physical, you know you're going to do it.
All right,
regardless.
Let me throw this out there. Do we want Rob on the air with his phony accent judging us? Is that what we're looking at here?
No, what I want is a picture of Rob. What?
Wow.
Allie wants a picture of Rob.
I'm just
saying,
Rob, I like
this. This has escalated in a good direction now.
I think you know my intent, Rob.
All right, Rob, thank you for listening. Thank you for calling. Let's go to Natalie in Orange. She's on line 2. I think
are we lucky that anyone ever calls us?
Yes, we are.
Okay.
I think Natalie's is a little more clear cut that there's some nonsense going on here. Let's see if you guys agree.
Hey, Natalie.
Hey, how are you?
Good, thank you. Micro cheating.
Yeah, so I don't know if this is or isn't. My boyfriend of 5 years, we live together. He goes down to the local Toys R Us for adults, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he says he has these two girls helping him pick out, you know, the perfect toy to bring home and the lotion, blah, blah, blah. So he comes home with a bag. I saw the bag. He's like, hey, I got something for you later. I'm like, hey, good times, right? He goes, oh, I'll be right back. And he leaves the house again. So I later found out that the girls were so helpful that he took them a pizza. Is that micro-cheating?
They weren't helpful as much as they were hot. That's what was happening.
He took them a pizza.
For lunch.
And
I'm
by
pretty nice of you.
Yeah, by you saying I found out later, did he tell you?
Yeah, he told me the next day that these girls were really helpful. How'd you like it? I'm like, yeah, I had a good time last night. I really liked that one lotion. And he's like, yeah, these girls were so helpful that I went and took them a pizza.
Well, if he told you he took them a pizza, then to me that's not micro-cheating at all.
He's not bringing ugly chicks at Nordstrom that helped him pick out a sweater, a pizza.
No, well, not that I know of, but
he probably is.
Now the running joke is, hey, babe, I'm a little low on some lotion. Can you take them down to KFC and see what come back with?
Well, it sounds like you're handling it just right, Natalie. Thanks for the call.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
Are there any words that give you the heebie-jeebies?
Yes.
Words you'd be willing to say out loud?
Moist.
Really? You're a moister.
Nope, I am not. I hate that word.
Why?
It's, I can't. It's just, no.
But have you ever stopped to think about why? Why does that one word give you the heebie-jeebies?
Yeah, because it's gross.
Why is it gross?
I don't want to explain to you why it's gross, Bean, but trust me, it's gross.
Well, maybe this news report will help make some sense of it.
It's the word that everyone hates. It sends shivers down people's spines and makes their face cringe. Why does this one word evoke such an intense reaction? Why is the word that shall not be said moist?
Ah! Why did you say it like that? Oh, my God.
Moist.
Well, now I don't even have to go on with this story. Now I can just play.
Moist.
All right. So they have done research into why that word, more than any other word, is the word.
Oh,
and by the way, you're going to be surprised to hear. What do you think the percentage is of people who feel like you do, Allie, that have a problem with that word?
I'd say over 50. So let's go 63.
You say 63. And again, if you're just joining us, we're talking about
moist. Whoa.
All right, let's find out.
Moist psychologically is a very loaded word. According to a research study conducted by psychology professor Dr. Paul Thibodeau, around 18% of American English speakers...
18%!
Huh.
That's all it is. So the vast majority of people are completely fine with that word, but those people who hate it are pretty vocal about
and
it.
And I don't think they've heard him say it.
Yes, the way he says it might up that number considerably.
Hate the word moist. And the hate behind moist stems from words association.
When I think of the word moist, other words I think of are sponge, sticky, thick.
Go on.
Yeah, you know, I kind of start thinking of, maybe some, like, bodily fluid type of grossness, maybe some, like, sweatiness, or I don't want to use the word discharge, but I just said discharge.
Sure. My God, it's too early for this, Bean.
He's not making it any better, is he? Is that the problem with you, is association with bodily functions? Is that your moist problem?
Yeah.
It is okay?
The word moist is fine. I don't care about the word moist. I've never hated it.
Dr. Thibodeau looked into three hypotheses. Maybe it was the way moist is pronounced that disgusts people. Or possibly it's the word's connotation that makes people cringe. Or it could be that people are simply jumping on the cultural trend that moist is a gross word.
By the way, I think there's a lot of that going on. I think moist is one of those things, like people who say they're afraid of clowns because other people are afraid of clowns. I don't think they have any problem with moist, but they know that that's the thing to not like is moist. I honestly believe there's a lot of bandwagoning going on.
Moist clowns.
Moist clowns are the best clowns. I also don't know why this psychological study has to have this dance bed underneath it. I don't know why.
It's very peppy.
I don't know why everything has to have music on it, but it does on the internet.
Posers.
I don't hate the word moist because other people hate the word moist. I'm perfectly capable of hating my own things all by myself.
Participants were asked what they thought of the word moist when grouped together with other words like phlegm and vomit and words related to sex. Dr. Thibodeau also asked what they thought of the words that sound like moist, like foist and hoist and rejoice.
Now, how about that, Allie? Do you have any problem with hoisting and foisting?
No, why would I? They don't...
But they sound so much like moist, though. Well, let's find out.
Foist is an awesome word. Hoist is the awesome word. Rejoice is an awesome word.
I know. I don't mind those words. I think hoist is a word that is necessary in conversation sometimes.
When was the last time anyone used the word hoist?
Monday.
Oh, really? All right.
I'm going to hoist
the result
that over
suggested
my head.
Is that what you said?
Yeah.
You actually used it in a sentence. Okay,
no.
That's fine.
The result suggested that people don't like the word moist because of its connection to body fluids and functions and phlegm and vomit. But that's not all. The study also found there was a bandwagoning effect happening.
Okay, here you go.
When researchers showed two groups, two different videos, one where male celebrities are awkwardly saying the word moist.
All right, now here's going to be the key that's going to break you of your dislike for the word moist. Listen to what they showed the second group. The first group is celebrities awkwardly saying the word moist. Here's what they showed the second group.
And one where moist is being used to describe cake.
Boom! When you hear the word moist, Allie...
You really think you healed me?
Yes.
No.
You don't think phlegm. You don't think discharge. You think cake.
I recently had a server describe the cake as the moistest cake they've ever had. And I was like, I'm out.
But that's a delicious piece of cake right there. Moist cake is the best cake.
Well, moist cake can be something else, too.
Oh, no.
Only the group that watched the first video reacted negatively.
I sort of feel like if there is a bandwagon, something is genuinely wrong with that word.
don't jump in the bandwagon. If all your friends jumped off the word moist, would you...
There you have it.
Okay, so there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. The scientific survey on the word moist, 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 moist.